welcome to episode 31 of Our Baseball Weekly, the weekly podcast from the baseball subreddit. This week, we have Andy back along with Jeremy and Jordan for some trade deadline trivia. Before we get to that, though, my name is Naim, and I am joined by Deej today to go over some of the news from this week of baseball and discuss the upcoming trade deadline. Deej, how you doing today?
What's up, my man? How are you?
I'm doing great. It's been a while since we've talked. We were on the Division Dandies together, and that was before I joined the team.
Yeah, it was like 2 months ago. Yeah, good to see you.
Yeah, you too. Lots of interesting and also weird news from this week. I'm sure if you're listening, you're waiting for us to talk about the Cleveland Guardians. We'll talk about that. But I wanted to start by talking about the big trades. The trade deadline is coming this Friday. I think 4 p.m. Eastern is the specific deadline. Obviously, if you follow baseball trade news, there will be trades dropping a little bit after that that got agreed upon before. So it'll probably be like through the night, you'll still hear some.
The pilot light of the hot stove has been ignited.
But, yes.
It's July 25th, so there's almost a week to go.
Yeah, exactly. So the first big trade of the trade season was Nelson Cruz went from the Minnesota Twins, got traded to the Tampa Bay Rays.
Yes, he did. My Cleveland Indians are playing the Rays right now, and he destroyed us. He is a good hitter. And that is an excellent pickup for Tampa.
Yeah, it's one of those things where like every move that Tampa makes is usually a good move. But like this one is one of those that's like completely unsurprisingly a good move. The dude mashes baseballs.
Mm-hmm. And he's 40 or 41 and he's hitting 300 and he's like going to hit 40 homers and he's still crushing it. He's not showing any diminished skills or anything. Like he's amazing.
I would say the biggest, if you told me at the beginning of the year that the Twins would be sellers at the trade deadline, I think we all would have been a little surprised. But you know, it's a solid sale. Yeah. He is 41. But like he's still hitting the baseball very, very hard. The trade was Cruz and pitcher Calvin Faucher for Joe Ryan and Drew Strotman, also both pitchers. I think
all minor leaguers.
All minor leaguers. Yeah, I think they're number 10 and number 17 prospect, which is even that is a little surprising because it seemed like Cruz was going to be going for a higher rated prospect. You know, obviously he's a single dimensional player, but I mean, he's really, really good at that dimension. Yeah.
Yeah. He's going to he'll step right in and just start destroying the opponents and
he will. And he has
a good trade.
Yeah.
Yep. Don't I know it?
Moving on, one that happened today that I did not even realize happened until we sat down to prepare for the show. Adam Frazier of the Pittsburgh Pirates is no longer of the Pittsburgh Pirates, got traded to the San Diego Padres. Infielder, outfielder, Tucupita Marcano, outfielder Jack Suwinski, and right-hander Michelle Miliano are the prospects heading back to Pittsburgh in the deal. Pirates are also sending about $1.5 million along with Frazier to San Diego. Frazier is hitting the ball really well this year. He's a lefty hitter, which is pretty good because their best lefty hitter right now was, I think, Eric Hosmer or maybe Jake Cronenworth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess my only question, I mean, great pickup by the Padres, of course. But what happens to Cronenworth? I guess they move him to the outfield because they like him and he's been hitting top of the order and he's been doing a great job. But like, you know, when your outfield is what, Tommy Pham, Trent Grisham and Will Myers, there's not a whole lot of room for a utility.
Yeah, I think Cronenworth and Frazier might just sort of like split time as super utility guys,
okay.
You know, just dispelling whoever. And again, supplanting quite a bit of Eric Hosmer plate appearances, I might be in their future.
Yeah, sorry, Jimmy, but Hosmer is definitely the odd man out here.
He's a great guy, you know. I had a couple of friends of mine were positing that maybe Eric Hosmer should get traded to the Mariners because they could probably use anybody at first, just a warm body at first base.
Yeah, he kind of has a little John Olerud thing going on that can maybe kind of get some retro points there for a similar player, but we'll see.
Frazier has another year of arbitration eligibility remaining too, so he's there through the 2022 season. So I mean, it's again, I'm not familiar with these prospects that heading to Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. but it's always a good problem to have where you don't know where to put a good hitter. Like I'd rather have more good hitters than fewer good hitters.
The fact that we hadn't heard of these prospects is kind of like a trend in underwhelming returns when the Pirates trade guys away. Like, you know, they traded like the Chris Archer trade was bad. They traded away like they're good young. I don't know. I feel like the Pirates are kind of the ones getting fleeced in trades lately.
Yeah, I am not. I mean, I don't think anybody's all very high on the Pirates front office. That's not a particularly well-run organization.
Yeah, reputation.
Yeah. Looks like Suwinski has a 949 OPS in AA this year, which is not, you know, it's pretty good. We'll see how that projects out. And Marcano had a major league cup of coffee this year as well. 50 plate appearances with San Diego so far. So like, you know, it seems like useful enough pieces. The Pirates also had like 3 All-Stars this year, which is weird.
Yeah. Good ones, legit ones. No, they're not tokens or anything.
Yeah. Yeah, they had like two or three starters, including Frazier, which was very odd, considering that they're a bad team. So, and clearly about to get worse without one of their All-Star hitters.
About to get much worse, and I feel kind of bad for Reynolds.
Yeah, well, we'll see how long he sticks on that team. Is he still pre-arb? Yeah.
Yeah, he's 26.
This is his last year of pre-arb for Brian Reynolds. But I doubt the Pirates will trade him right away. But they also, like, he's not going to be part of the next good Pirates team. Like, it's very, you know, I could totally see them trading him away. Like, Ke'Bryan Hayes obviously is I think still a rookie this year, so like he will stick around. But I could fully see them wanting to trade Brian Reynolds before he goes even into arbitration.
Yeah, unfortunately that does seem inevitable.
Yeah.
But great trade for the Padres. They've been killing it on trades. They got like so many amazingly good players over the last year and a half or so. So a lot of pressure on them to succeed, but they're
4.5 games back, I think, in the NL West. So it looks, you know, and they're obviously meant to be a good team this year. And, you know, obviously the Giants came out of nowhere, but I think they're hoping to sort of pick up those extra wins here down the home stretch. And I think they have a lot of games against NL West opponents in the back half of this season.
Yeah, it could set up a crazy wild card game between the Dodgers and the Padres. That'd be
yeah. Right now it's Dodgers Padres. I would expect the Dodgers to overtake the Giants sometime in the next couple months.
Probably,
but Giants Padres would still be a very interesting wild card game if that's where it leads.
Yeah, just the fact that Giants have been this good this long makes me think I have no idea what I'm talking about when it comes to the 2021 listen, Giants. Yeah. So we'll see.
You're not wrong. All right, moving on. The next thing I have here on the outline, Byron Buxton could not reach extension with the Minnesota Twins. The Twins have been trying to extend him. Apparently, both sides couldn't really figure it out. Minnesota offered $80 million over 7 years. It seems like, yeah, both sides couldn't come to an agreement. So there's still time for an extension. That was sort of a big story this week.
Yeah, well, okay, so I just sorted Byron Buxton's career games descending. Career high in games played 140, 92, 87, 46. So the guy has played more than half a season 3 times.
He's also injured right now.
Yes, literally right now injured. So obviously just classic case of great when he's on the field, but and granted his injury this year, I think it was like a broken hand from getting hit by a pitch. So it's a freak injury and not a chronic injury, but like still just look at the guy's games played versus how highly he's been regarded. What was he, the number one or number two overall pick the year he was second overall in 2012?
Yeah, and he was a top prospect coming up. You know, it was a little bit of a I mean, I wouldn't say a bust, right? But his potential didn't really come into play until a few years in. Looks like 2019 Sony 17 was also good because he's such a good defender, you know, in addition to being now quite a good hitter as well. You know, it kind of balances out like it wasn't early on. I don't know. He's an interesting case because this is like, he now is this is last year of arbitration, I think.
No,
he has another year. He has one more year. So they do have time to, you know, to figure something out with him. I don't know. I guess to your point, if he can't stay on the field, what is his value as a free agent? Is he going to get $80 million over 7 years? You know.
Yeah, I can't even think of a comp for this guy. A guy this good, like a guy you're like, yeah, if he plays, he's maybe Grady Sizemore or something. I mean, but even Grady had like four excellent full seasons before his knees busted into glass. Like this guy, he's had one full season, and in that season, he had a decent WAR, but it was very defense heavy. And you know, you got a hit, and he had a sub 100 OPS plus. Looking on Baseball Reference here.
Aaron Hicks, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know if Hicks was expected to be a superstar the way Buxton was, and Buxton is like what he did this year. We're like, yeah, there he is. That's what we were expecting all along. So like, he's superstar good, but like, it's staying on the field. And I mean, I get the whole $10 million a year for 7 years thing is a little bit of a slap to the face, but like, it's not that. I mean, I think it really is like, hey, let's split the risk here.
Right. Because it is. I mean, if you can't stay on the field, like you are a risk. And if you can make $11 million for, you know, like that's per year, like that's not bad to take. Like, you know, we saw Ozzie Albies and Ronald Acuna take similar kind of deals a couple of years ago because it makes sense. You can take the money now. If you get injured and blow out your career, like you're good, you're set for life. So it is tough, you know, it's hard to, I mean, they got another year to figure it out, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, you always got to think of that. Remember that guy, Matt Harrington, who was drafted, you know, top five overall in like 2000 or something. And then he just signed Scott Boris and then just kept like, you know, going and playing in the Northern League or something. And then, like, and he got drafted like five times and he went from first round to third round to eighth round to like last round. And then he just like never made the majors. And now, and then he was like working at Costco or something. So like, you got to always think about that worst case scenario when someone gives you like life-changing money, like $80 million, that will change your life and create intergenerational wealth for the rest of, you know, like two centuries if you're, incredibly terrible with it. So yeah, it's super hard to turn that down, but he's rolling the dice. I hope they can just work something out, because like, I think you know, he's their guy, and you know, I'd love to see what he can do in a full healthy season, and I hope they can find a way to do it in Minnesota. But yeah, it's just kind of an odd situation. I don't even know what the right thing is. Like that deal that the Twins offered looks like on the short side of, like, I think it's on the bell curve of what he should be getting, what's reasonable given his career. It's on, you know, they're going to start out on the low side and he'll negotiate up. Hopefully they could maybe do like $7, $10, $100 million or something like that.
I think that probably is, I mean, if I were Buxton, I'd probably take $780, but $700, I think, seems more like the kind of thing he'd be willing to take. But it seems like, you know, that might be the kind of counteroffer he would have given. And I don't see why the Twins wouldn't agree to that, you know, at this point. I mean, maybe there's a lot of risk, but still, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. There's like a vesting option based on like, you know, like qualified seasons in the first 7 years or something. Yeah. I don't know. Like, just like be like, hey, look, just if you can stay healthy, we'll give you this like a $300 million.
Like that John Lackey deal, right? Where it was like, if you miss a whole year for an injury, then the last year is going to be major league minimum, like that kind of thing. Not necessarily that kind of thing, but like, yeah, we've seen those kinds of clauses before.
Yeah. The union doesn't like them, but I think in this case, like, I think they both have to get creative and figure something out.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to one of the weirder stories in baseball that I've seen in a long time. Yermin Mercedes this week, he made an Instagram post that said he was stepping away from baseball. He didn't say, he didn't use the word retirement.
I think he used the Spanish. I think he was like retiro or something. I thought so. Cut this if he didn't, but I thought he did say that.
I was under the impression that it didn't seem like he was retiring and that he like that, it seemed pretty possible that he was going to be coming back quite soon. Not necessarily right away. Right. But I was like, okay, he's going to take some time, step away from baseball, then decide he's coming back. And like, you know, I also get, he's a, you know, 28, 29 year old, rookie, you know, career minor leaguer. But the very next day he was in uniform, for the White Sox AAA affiliate, on the bench, and deleted his Instagram post and posted a new one with a picture of a phoenix, saying, "I'm never going to give up."
Rise from the ashes.
Yeah.
It was weird. I remember, he's what, like 28, 29, came out of nowhere, had an amazing first 2 months, and then he just kind of regressed to the mean and ended up average overall. And he was mostly a DH, so, you know, you're not getting defensive value out of him. So, I remember he announced he was retiring, and I believe I flared the post. What? I think a lot of people agreed with my sentiment. Like this guy makes the majors and he just gets sent down and he retires. Like, obviously we can't get inside the guy's head, but we're kind of worried about him. Like, is he doing all right mentally, emotionally? Like, I get he's like been on a roller coaster, but Triple A is not so bad, buddy.
So it's one of those things where, like, you know, maybe you're not the third best catcher on the White Sox, but he seems like the kind of guy who, like, you know, I don't think he's a major league starter material. He had a couple good months, whatever, but like, he seems like the kind of guy who could hack it as like a guy who just ends up as a backup catcher for 5, 6, 7, 8 different teams over a career. Like,
that's nothing to, you know, nothing to sneeze at. Like do it. Yeah. That's a good life. That's a good life story.
It's a great life. Yeah. Ozzie Guillen, ripped him. Yep. The quote was, first of all, you are not Otani, you are not Jose Abreu, nor are you Tim Anderson. You're a fat boy who eats hamburgers. You were only lucky that some injuries allowed you to go up to MLB and you had a good start.
Yeah, I know. I thought I heard that Ozzie called him a cheeseburger kid, but we're splitting hairs here.
It could be cheeseburger. That is what the flair on Our Baseball says. Misleading, he said cheeseburger kid. So it's very possible that's what he said. He continues, you once told me people here pay to watch me play. And even from Frank Thomas, I didn't hear those words. You are not a prospect. I myself defended you for 2 months. But when I interviewed you, I felt sorry for you. I have good friends in the Dominican Republic, and none of them gave me good references from you. Savage.
He was ripped
from Ozzie Guillen.
Yeah, Ozzie Guillen, and then was it Hector Gomez or the other guy who was I won't act like I understand all the nuances, but yeah, he's definitely not really perceived very well in the Latino baseball world. Like, those guys, they're usually very supportive, and those guys were ripping into him. So he must have pissed some people off.
It reminds me of like the Jairo Munoz situation like a year and a half ago, where he just walked out of Cardinals camp and like didn't tell anybody. And I was shocked that a week and a half later he landed with the Red Sox. It was like, it like that is what like my the first thing that came to mind was like, and especially like, again, Jairo Munoz with the Cardinals, he was a perfect, like, he seemed like he was going to make the team, you know, maybe like as a bench role, but like, he seemed like he was going to make the team, and then he just left and just didn't talk to anybody. So like, it's a similar feeling situation to me. And it, you know, yeah, kind of leaves a weird taste in my mouth.
Well, I'm glad he's back and in organized ball, and just kind of whatever happened, he just was able to move past it and be like, all right, hey, look, playing Triple A baseball in my mid to late 20s ain't so bad. I'll do it.
That is, yeah, I agree. It's so weird that it was one night. Like, it was literally the next day he was like, it was so weird. Like, if it was like he took the weekend and came back on Monday, even that would be like, oh, your Mercedes is back. Like, all right, cool. He thought about it. But it was literally he Instagram posted one night, then it was in the news cycle, and by the next afternoon he was playing baseball again.
I don't think I'll ever quite understand what was happening, but like, all's well that ends well. Hopefully, I hope he can make it back to the majors. And
yeah, like, like I said, like, yeah, a long career as a backup catcher who has a little bit of power, like who can kind of hit a little bit, is a perfectly fine career to have. And I think he'd be happy with that career. It's just, it's so weird that he, like, I don't know. It seems so short-sighted for him to make that kind of announcement that he did. And then obviously maybe realize it was short. Maybe it's like his family called him and was like, what are you doing? This is stupid. I don't know.
Yeah. I'd like to think some like sensible older relative just kind of smacked some sense into him and was like, okay, you're right. Yeah,
yeah exactly. But, all right. Moving on to maybe the biggest story of the week. The Cleveland baseball team has announced their new name. I know it was kind of in question whether they'd even have a name next year. Yeah. It was definitely announced that this year would be the last year they were going to be called the Indians. And it was unsure whether or not they'd have a name yet, but there was a big Twitter announcement, a video, and the official name. Do you want to take a DJ? You are a Cleveland fan. I'll give you the floor here.
Yeah. I've been a Cleveland fan since the early 90s. And you know, this is my team. And it always felt a little weird that they were called the Indians, like an ethnic group. And, it's easy to get sick of having to talk about and defend that all the time. And so just for that reason alone, I love that we've moved on and we've picked a name. And is Guardians my ideal name? No. But like, do I have a better idea? No. I mean, there's a lot of pressure to pick something.
Yeah, I agree. Right. It's one of those things where it's like, It's good that they're leaving the old name behind. I don't necessarily love the new name, and I'm not, unlike you, I don't have to deal with it on a day-to-day basis, I guess.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I'm sure we'll all get used to it like we did with New Orleans Pelicans. But at the same time, like I when New Orleans Pelicans was announced, I was like, that sounds like a minor league baseball team name. And Cleveland Guardians to me sounds like a team where like they couldn't get the rights to a real baseball team and they just called them the Guardians or something like that. And I know it's got some history, you know, the traffic guardian or what, I'm not sure, like the statue. So like, there is some Cleveland history to it. Yeah. So like, it's interesting, but I don't love the name, but
yeah, I don't love it either, but I don't hate it. Like, it's not like, it doesn't piss me off or anything. Yeah. But yeah, just like, I was trying to remember, the last time a team changed names like that. Let me pull up a list. I made a post the other day about this. So
I think it is the Pelicans, but that was a little bit different, right? Because that was the name Hornets going back to Charlotte.
So in baseball, anyway, the last time a team changed names without moving cities, so like the Nats and Expos, not like that. So the Devil Rays, Rays, that's not, you know, that's
right.
The last time it like really changed names was 64-65 when the Houston Colt 45s became the Houston Astros. So it's been, you know, 56 years since a team changed their name without moving cities, besides the Rays and Double Rays, which isn't really that.
Right. Yeah. I agree.
So yeah, there's a lot of pressure to come up with something perfect. And like, there is no perfect name. There's nothing that'll make.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
2/3 of people happy. I mean, whatever you pick, you know, like some percent of people are just going to hate it. And then some people might love it. Most people are indifferent. I ran kind of a quickie poll in the Our Baseball Mod Slack. And I just asked everybody, what do you think about all 30 team names? And I included Guardians instead of Indians. And so I said, just rate it on a 1 to 5 scale. 1, I hate it. 3, neutral. 5, I love it. The Guardians were the most neutral team name in all of the MLB. it was like 58% neutral or something among the like 15 people that took the survey or whatever.
That's interesting. Cause there are team names that I think are like a little silly, but because of the history, you know, they've been around so long that I don't really like Dodgers, right? Dodgers seems like a little bit of a silly name.
Yeah.
But like they've been the Dodgers for so long. Right. Exactly. Or like the Mets, right? Like Metropolitans is kind of like, Metropolitans is weird. Shortening it to Mets is a little less weird, but even then it's like a little odd. But just they've been the Mets for you know 50-60 years now. Like now it's just a part of baseball. So I'm sure in 20-30 years when it's like when they've been the Guardians for 20 or 30 years, I won't even give it a second thought.
Won't be a big deal. Yeah, just while we're on the subject, I've got the name ranking list. So the number one team with an average of 4.08 out of 5 is the Brewers. So like that's the best name among, you know, us, followed shortly by the Astros, Rockies, Mariners, Royals, Pirates, and Twins. So in that order. And then at the very bottom, tied, is the Philadelphia Phillies and the Atlanta Braves. They're both tied 1.42 out of five. So it's, basically, I think we
So the pattern I was detecting at the top was that it was like team names that had something to do with the area, right? Astros because of Houston and Brewers because of Milwaukee. But then Phillies being at the bottom is like, well, I guess it's just kind of lazy, right? The Philadelphia Philadelphians.
It's the Bodie McBoatface of baseball. And then the Braves, you know, they're, you know, kind of now that the Indians are gone, they're, you know, they're kind of filling that role. And so they're tied. So yeah, we kind of decided that the name Braves is considered as racist as the Phillies is dumb, which is very on both.
It's one of those things where like, yeah, like, you know, now that that Washington is the football team and we'll see if they get a new mascot in the next couple of years. They still haven't. And Cleveland is the Guardians that puts teams like the Braves and the Chiefs and the Blackhawks on the hot seat. And we'll see if that changes. The Blackhawks have said they're not, categorically said they are not changing the name, but I wouldn't be surprised if they change the iconography to be a bird instead of a Native American head.
Yeah, I actually got into a surprisingly heated argument about this topic on Sporkle. So a long time ago, I made a quiz. It was like 10 years ago. I made a quiz of like name big four sports teams named after animals. And like people were like, dude, there's no such thing as a Blackhawk. There are Black Hawks, but when you don't have a space in there, it's acting like there's a hawk called a Black Hawk, and there isn't. And like, yeah, it was like it got a little spicy in the Sporkle comments.
I was speaking to a Black Hawks fan the other day who was, and we were talking about this topic because it was, you know, right after the Guardians name change was announced. And he was like, "Yo, you think you're gonna put the space?" And I'm like, "No, they don't have to. They'll just call it a Black Hawk and make it a Black Hawk. Like, I don't care. Like, there's other team names that are just that silly where they just like, yeah, here's a thing that's not a real name for a thing, but like, is there an actual bird called a Redbird? I don't think there is, but the Memphis Redbirds exist. So
yeah. Yeah. So just incidentally, after the Braves and Phillies, the next least popular names were in order. Reds, Nationals, Athletics, Red Sox, and White Sox. So those are the dumb ones. The good ones are Brewers, Astros, Rockies, Mariners, Royals, Pirates, and Twins. Those are kind of the popular and unpopular ones there.
So I wonder how Pittsburgh Alligators would have done. Probably on the bottom tier there.
You can't spell it.
All right. Moving on. Let's talk very briefly, because there hasn't really been very much, but the Olympics opening ceremony was this past Friday. Softball and baseball have returned to the Olympics for this Olympics. I believe it's a temporary thing. I don't think they're going to be at the Paris Olympics in 2024, but because baseball is such a huge sport in Japan, they have returned for that. Softball has already begun. I believe the first baseball game is going to be this Friday. Friday at it looks like 5 a.m. Central time is my time zone, so 6 a.m. Eastern time is U.S. versus Israel. At least that's the one the U.S. team plays first. I'm not sure if there are other games happening before that, because Google is a little bit U.S. focused when I look for baseball. It looks like Group A Tuesday at 10 p.m. Central time is the first game, Dominican Republic versus Japan, which actually should be a good game.
So I'm going to be honest, I'm way more likely to watch softball than Olympic baseball, because softball it's the best. Like they're sitting the best of the best. Baseball, it's not. It's washed up guys. Like over 35 who can't catch on to the majors and college kids, right?
Yeah, I'm looking right now at the Dominican team even. It's Jose Bautista, Melky Cabrera, Emilio Bonifacio, Juan Francisco, Jumbo Diaz. I know Japan has the time off, and I believe South Korea also has the time off. So I believe those two are sending their best, and I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a Japan-Korea final.
Man, I love the Olympics, and I love baseball, but just if we're not sending the best of the best, then why? Like,
also for what it's worth, we did send the best of the best in basketball and they lost to France today. So,
okay. But at least we're sending our best.
Yeah. I have been talking to some friends about this, and they're like, we like in the next CBA, We very much want to see an exception, at least for LA, right? LA is 2028. Yeah. Like, it seems like the perfect, I know a lot of guys who are young or younger, or like, you know, like I believe I saw Mike Trout say he wants to, or like, and guys like Bryce Harper, like, would love to go play at the Olympics. And if it's, you know, when it's in LA, it's not like they're gonna, like, they're gonna use Dodger Stadium to play at, right? And they might even use Angel Stadium to play at if they can want two games running at once. So like, either they're going to have to send the Dodgers and possibly Angels on like 2 week road trips, or it makes sense to like carve out a week in the middle of the season to play Olympic baseball. I know like the teams might not love it and the owners might not love it, but it's like, it's the Olympics are in the United States, like in 2028. So like, it would be the perfect time to be like, we want to win the gold medal on our home turf.
Yeah. Okay. Why not make baseball a winter Olympic sport? Like, I get it's not a winter sport, but just build a dome. It's everybody's off season. We can send our best. I don't know. Like, I always thought that would be a good solution, is just make it a winter sport.
Yeah. I don't know. I see where you're coming from on that, and I get it. I agree with the concept, but this is, yeah, it's also just not a winter sport, you know? It's like,
yeah, I got the knee jerk no, but
right,
like,
but no, I see where you're coming from. I love the World Baseball Classic. Like, that's a lot of fun, and it's also every 4 years. You know, it's the IOC does participate in the organization of that event, and that's a, like, you know, I it's more than Olympic baseball, because it is, you know, takes place during spring training, and it allows for actual world-class major leaguers for not just America, but also the Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico and the other countries that have you know, major league presences. You know, like, for example, like, even Japan, right? Japan has NPB players, but like, Shohei Ohtani's not playing for Japan. You know, I'm sure he'd love to go represent Japan.
Yeah,
man. That would be sick. That'd be amazing. Yeah. Olympic softball, the United States women's team, I believe, is 2-0 right now.
Cool.
That team I expect to win. No. Jenny Finch, I think, has been retired for years.
Okay. Yeah. She's like 40, but I wasn't sure if they, because I think she's the same age as Jose Bautista. So you'd think.
She is 40 years old. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if she's commentating on it or not, but
I'm sure she's involved in some way. She's like the Tony Hawk of softball. Like, you know, she's like the one that everybody's heard of.
Yeah. Tony Hawk, who is definitely commentating on skateboarding at the Olympics, and it's dope. Every time Tony Hawk has shown up to talk about to Olympic skateboarding so far, they've played Superman by Goldfinger, and I love it. It's the best. That's just his official NBC Olympics theme song now. It's amazing.
That's just like the national anthem of skateboarding, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
I hope the Olympics can figure out a way to make baseball have the best of the best, because if it's not the best of the best, I just can't get into it, and I hope they figure something out that works.
Yeah. All right. Now moving on, that is all of the existing news. We're going to do a little breakdown of some trade deadline moves that we think that teams should be making. So let's just real quick go around the league. AL East, it obviously the Orioles are going to be sellers, right?
Yeah.
I think Trey Mancini, Cedric Mullins probably are untouchable. Who do you think the Orioles need to be selling? Do they have a lot of value otherwise? John Means, maybe?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Is Means, I mean, obviously he threw the no-no. He's good. He was having a great season. Do you really think Mancini's untouchable? I know that, you know, the recovery from cancer is kind of a, like, a reason to maybe keep him, and maybe it's just that, and I would get that. But like, I feel like if not for that, I wouldn't consider him untouchable.
I think right now he is the face of the franchise.
I totally get that. Maybe that's all there is to it.
Yeah. Michael Franco could be moved. I mean, he's not hitting very well this year, but he's, you know, he could be like a recovery type piece. Austin Hayes.
Yeah. I think Franco definitely makes sense. He's kind of like a proven veteran, you know, capital P, capital V. So he could, you know, so someone will take him. I don't know, man. The Orioles are, I'm not sure what they're doing.
Their bullpen is tragic.
Yeah, they're in rough shape.
Means has a 2.72 ERA this year. Like,
he's good.
He's pretty good. And
how old is he? How far along is he?
28. He's 28. This is his fourth year.
Okay. Yeah. It wouldn't shock me if they traded him, although, like, he seems like the kind of guy you'd want to build around, too. Especially when your second starter is like Matt Harvey or whoever they got going on.
Yes, it is Matt Harvey.
Yeah, rough times in Baltimore. I don't know. Yeah. They need innings eaters at this point. I get Harvey is that. And I don't know if Harvey's page pulled up, but I think I remember his FIP was a lot lower than his ERA. So maybe he'll kick it into gear in the second half.
He's got a 4.43 FIP on a 6.65 ERA, neither of which is very good.
Yeah, but you know, you'll take that.
Means is pitching a lot better than his FIP. He's got a 4.41 FIP as to his 2.72 ERA. But
wow, so Means and Harvey have basically the same FIP.
Sure do.
Kind of interesting. Wow.
However, Means has a 0.868 WHIP and Harvey has a 1.58 WHIP.
Yeah.
Well, and yeah, also Harvey walks a lot more and strikes out a lot fewer than Means.
Yeah, so, Means is good and Harvey's bad.
And Harvey's bad now.
Yeah. I don't care what their FIPs are, but yeah, I don't know. Maybe hang on to Harvey just because, like, why not? He'll.
I think it's hang on to Harvey because nobody wants him.
Yes, I think so. But maybe he'll kind of actualize his FIP and provide a little bit of marginal value or something. I don't know. We'll see.
I'm just
trying to think of something nice to say about the Orioles. It's hard. Doing what I can.
Obviously, we know the Rays are buyers. They just picked up Nelson Cruz. Thinking maybe a pitcher could go to Baltimore.
They're one of those teams that, like, doesn't appear to have weaknesses, even though they don't have a superstar. Like, who's the Rays superstar? I Kiermaier, but, like, he's not, like, anywhere close to their best player. Like, who's, like, they just, like,
a Rosarena.
Yeah, maybe it is him. But yeah, they're able to just moneyball, like, an insanely good franchise without having any superstars.
Swear to God, I just learned at this moment that Michael Wacha is on the Tampa Bay Rays. And he is not been very good. So that seems like, you know, shore up the back end of the rotation with a half decent pitcher.
Yeah, once the Cards cut him, I kind of figured he was in, like, Matt Harveyville, just kind of.
I didn't expect him to be good again after he left the Cardinals, but I literally just learned at this moment that he's Tampa Bay Ray and has been all year.
Yeah,
well, 17 starts. Like,
the Rays just—they know what they're doing. Like, every time they make a move, you're like, why is that a genius move? I know that it is a genius move. I'm just trying to figure out why.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Waka has been bad, so that seems like a quick and easy replacement. Him and Ryan Yarbrough has been not great, but he's been pitching a little worse than his FIP, so that might normalize a little bit to be like a decent, you know, number four, number five. And then obviously Tyler Glasnow is injured, and that's not what they want.
No. Yeah, I actually I was watching Yarbrough pitch against the Indians either today or yesterday. I took a nap, I forget. But he is the very model of a crafty left-hander. Like, he just goes up there and just throws 83 mile an hour junk and gets it done.
He's perfectly adequate. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a Jamie Moyer type, maybe without quite the upside of Jamie Moyer in his good season, but kind of a similar type of pitcher. From watching him.
Boston, Toronto, New York, I think all could be picking people up.
Yeah, they all need to go for it, for sure. Especially the Yankees. They're in trouble. Like, when you're the Yankees and you're not, like, set up for a playoff slot, like, there's a fire under your butt. So they're not gonna sell. Like, who would they sell? Like, they don't have, like, big sell, like, yeah, nobody jumps out at you. You know, there's no, like,
it's either players they want to keep long term or that nobody wants to buy.
Yeah. And they've done some selling. They got rid of, like, Talkman and Mike Ford. So I don't know. I bet they wish they had those guys right about now. But yeah. And then the Red Sox weren't they terrible last year?
That's the Red Sox MO, right? They're terrible for a year and then great the next year, then terrible. Like, it's literally top to bottom every single year. Worst to first.
Yeah.
Worst to first.
Yeah, I guess they're just bouncing back. I mean, you know, what they've got is working. So, you know, I mean, add some pieces if you think it'll help. I mean, you can always use more starting pitching. I think their bullpen's doing pretty good and their lineup is a bunch of good youngsters. So I don't know.
Yeah,
I think,
on the other hand, I think until Sale came back, their ace was Nick Pivetta. So,
ooh,
seems like seems like something that, they could maybe use some shoring up of the rotation.
I think Evaldi's in there, right? He's doing pretty well, if I recall correctly.
Is he starting? Yeah. I thought he might be relieving.
Oh, I'm not sure. Yeah. And then, yeah, the Blue Jays, they're, you know, their window is opening. They've got, you know, like three or four.
Evaldi is starting, by the way. I don't know why I thought he was relieving. I must be thinking of, I think I'm thinking of Drew Pomeranz for some reason.
Yeah. Those guys are kind of cut from the same cloth. But yeah, Blue Jays, I believe it's kind of Ryu and Pray for Rain up there. I don't think they have much in the rotation to write home about. I think they've been using like the carcasses of Ross Stripling and Matt Shoemaker a little too much.
Yeah.
So they definitely need some starting pitching. Their lineup is great. You can, you know, they could like,
I think they need, I think they also need bullpen. I mean, who doesn't need bullpen?
Who doesn't? Yeah. But yeah, I think they're like 1 year away from really becoming, you know, like a division, a perennial division, you know, winner. So they should go for it. But like at the same time, I think like if they hang back and really go for it next year, I wouldn't blame them for taking that strategy.
Yeah, that's, it's like a rough place to be is 49 and 45 and in fourth place. Like,
yeah,
it's just like that short end of the stick. Yankees same for 51 and 46 in third place. Like, not really where you want to. You know, they're playing well, and maybe they could be playing a little better, but yeah, like you said, the lineup, the Guerrero, Semien, Bichette, Biggio, Gurriel, Teoscar Hernandez, Randall Grichuk, like they're all hitting good to great. And then, yeah, the rotation is Robbie Ray, Hyunjin Ryu, and then nothing.
Yeah. So definitely go get a starter. Another bat if you want, like, but that's a pretty good lineup. I wouldn't like, you know, mortgage the future for that.
Van Biggio's not hitting great this year. I think obviously his future is projects out pretty well, but maybe, you know, and I think, what's happening with Rowdy Tellez? Oh, he got traded.
Traded to Tellez, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. They traded. He was also not hitting well. They traded him to Milwaukee, and then he remembered how to hit at least for the last 10 games. But also, he can't play. He can't play the field that well. He's like, so I don't know.
Why would you send him to the NL? I don't know. I mean, he's a DH to me. But,
well, and also Springer. Year. Springer was injured for a big chunk of this year. And he's uninjured. So,
when their outfield is Springer, Grichuk, and Teoscar, like, that's about as good an outfield as there is.
Yeah.
Like, those guys are all healthy.
For sure. AL Central, Sellers galore here. Kansas City is probably going to be selling Whit Merrifield, I would
Merrifield, think. Merrifield, Carlos Santana, probably. Danny Duffy, I've heard. No one else really jumps out at you. But
Greg
like
Holland, maybe.
Yeah, I'm not sure how he's doing, but if he's, you know, looks like he could be a good piece, he might get moved to a team like the Blue Jays.
I mean, even if he doesn't look like he's a great piece, like you get he's a decent enough bullpen piece with history that you're like, you could take a flyer on him and hope that he's good.
Yeah. The White Sox are good. Their rotation is
White Sox are definitely buyers. Nick Madrigal is injured, so they need a second baseman.
But like a couple of injured guys are coming back, right? I think Luis Robert, or is he coming back or is he out for the year?
He was on the 60-day DL. Let me see what the update is. Cleared to begin a minor league rehab assignment as of 5 days ago. So
okay, and Eloy Jimenez just came back. So they basically just got like two like big bopper outfielders. Like you know, that's like acquiring it's like acquiring a guy like that. You know, when they come off the DL out of nowhere,
right? For sure, yeah. But it is one of those things that like you know you're I don't. How are you going to do without a you know, they lost their leadoff hitter, second baseman, that I could see them trying to replace someone like that, at least in the short term. And then maybe, I don't know, like they're without a DH, I think. Right. It was your man Mercedes.
Yeah, well, now that he's gone. Yeah. You know, you can always pick up another stick. And that rotation though, like Lance Lynn, Lucas Giolito, Carlos Rodon,
yeah,
Dallas Keuchel, who's even like the odd man out, like among those four. If you need, like,
no, I think they're pretty happy with the pitching. Cody Hewer has been not great, but I think he's okay. Michael Kopech is a dude who can start, but has been in the bullpen because he's been lights out in the bullpen. Yeah, so I think they're pretty happy with what they've got. Aside from, again, the injured Nick Madrigal, who they could use or some sort of replacement, but otherwise, like, they had to dump Adam Eaton because he was bad and they needed space for better outfielders.
Poor Spanky. I don't know. Yeah, he grew up an Indians fan, so I always like kind of thought maybe we'd acquire him, but looks like that's not happening. But yeah, so yeah, Royals are sellers, Twins are sellers. They've already sold. Tigers, I'm not really sure. The Tigers are playing surprisingly well, given they don't really have any like household names or anything. But like, I think they're just gonna kind of stay the course. They don't need to buy or sell. I think they're just kind of rebuilding. The Indians, I've heard, are talking about selling on Jose Ramirez, which I would hate.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I think because they're not terrible this year.
No, we're, you know, a couple games over 500, and you know, definitely within like go for it range. Like you're like the second wild card is. I think if you're over 500 at the deadline, you should go for it, unless there's some reason not to. But like there isn't. And, you know, Cleveland's had horrible injury luck. We lost Shane Bieber, Aaron Civale, and Zach Plesac, and like other key hitters at various points. So, you know, we're getting Bieber and Civale back at some point in the next month or so. That's a pretty good, you know, 1-2-3 playoff punch. But like this, it, for Cleveland, this just kind of feels like a lost season. Like, even though we're somehow over 500, it's kind of like smoke and mirrors. It feels like we're just like, I don't know, like, you know, like you sometimes there's like a special team, like your team just feels special that year. This is not a special team. Like, there's a bunch of weirdos in the lineup. Like, there's like only like three or four, you know, true Indians that I'm really like, yeah, these are our guys. Maybe more than that, but like not enough like for the team to be special. So,
right.
If they punted on this year and like just like got really good for their first season as the Guardians next year, you know, you hate it at the time, but I think it could, you know, looking at it over like a 3 or 4 year period, it, like you can look at it in hindsight as the right move, but we'll see. But yeah, I doubt we do much buying. I think talking about selling on Jose Ramirez, which would be awful because I love that guy and he's so good. And I think he's got like two unbelievably team-friendly team options the next 2 years. You think like 14 and 15 million or something, like, you know, in his age, like 29 and 30 seasons, this dude that's like finished top three in the MVP.
But that, I mean, on the other hand, that makes them a very appealing chip for somebody else to acquire, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you can get like, if you can absolutely destroy another team's, you know, prospect, you know, situation and just like totally restock your minor leagues off this one guy. Like, hey, maybe it's worth it. Like the Lindor trade already is like okay, because like Ahmed Rosario is like pretty good. Like he's not as good a fielder as Frankie, but he's like he's a solid middle infield type. So like it doesn't even feel like that. And Frankie's was terrible this year. Now he's injured. So like especially when you compare the two of them, so it is possible to trade a beloved superstar away and feel okay about it the next year. So I try to keep that in mind. But like, man. I just love Jose Ramirez, and I hope we can keep him.
Detroit is getting shockingly good seasons out of Jonathan Scope and Willy Peralta. Okay. I expect neither to be a Tiger at the end of this week.
Yeah,
they're both signed to the end of this year. There's no reason for them to keep them. They've both been too good for them to keep. Like it, they both I think are moving. They might also move some pieces out of their bullpen. Like they've got some decent enough bullpen pieces that like I don't think, you know, Gregory Soto has been good this year and this year only for them. And you know, he is I think ARB eligible next year, but there's no reason for them to keep him around.
Yeah, I'm not going to get excited over a reliever I never heard of until this year having a good half season.
No, I agree, right? Yeah. But like,
you can get
everybody can always use bullpen help, right? And they're like, well, if we can get them for cheap, then we get them for cheap. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally off topic. Well, not totally off topic, but I thought it was cool the Tigers have a shortstop named Short and a first baseman named Scoop. Yeah, it's not Scope, but it looks like Scoop. But
yeah.
Some nominative determinism in there. So I hope they can at least figure out. Maybe they can get an outfielder named like Fielder or something like that.
Well, they had a first baseman named Fielder for a while.
Oh, they did. Yeah. It's something to build on that.
Two of them, actually. Different times. All right. Let's talk a little about the AL West. Texas Rangers have been not very good and have some good pieces. Kyle Gibson and Joey Gallo.
Yeah. Man, Gallo, he is a very unique player. Like he's got some like skill sets like that you just don't see. So the dude's like got 80 grade power. He walks a lot. And he's actually a really good defensive center fielder.
Right? I remember like knowing he was a good like defensive third baseman when he was coming up. And it's like,
yeah.
It's one of those, like, it was him and oh my god, who's the guy on the A's?
Profar?
No. Outfielder. Mark Canna. Who's like, who is a guy who came up as a first baseman and is also a weirdly good defensive center fielder. And neither of those compute to me, because they're both guys who like should be, you stick them in the corners because they can hit. And it turns out, no, they can also field shockingly well.
Yeah. But he can't, like, you know, he's got the low batting average and the high strikeouts. So like who's even been like Mike Cameron is the guy that comes to mind as a guy who is a great center fielder and struck out a lot and hit some dingers, but he didn't have like this 80 grade power. I think he could hit like 25, 30 dingers. But yeah. Gallo is like, he's a surprisingly good and useful player. I mean, his batting average.
I don't remember how much Jim Edmonds struck out, but he was obviously a gold glove center fielder with a lot of power.
Off the top of my head, Edmonds was a much better pure hitter than Gallo, I would say.
Definitely was a better pure hitter, but like he was like a 250 hitter.
Yeah, but he wasn't hitting like 2-0 something or
anything. No.
Gallo might have hit 190 something once. But Gallo can really help somebody. He's an excellent player all around. And he's pretty underrated in my opinion. I think if you can look past the unattractive batting average and the strikeouts, everything else is pretty good. So they should, I think they can get a huge haul for him from the right team. And then, you don't need a guy like Gibson. He's, you know, he wants out. Like the Rangers are, you know, they suck this year and you know, they just need to clean house and get something for him. And Mariners, I've got him.
Yeah, Mariners are weird. Mariners are always in kind of a weird position, and they do have guys like Haniger, Seager, and Kendall Graveman, who's been a great reliever this year.
Yeah,
so like that's nowhere. I think those are probably expected moves. I think they've pretty much decided they're out of contention for the year.
Yeah, I think they're kind of in a similar boat as Cleveland, just kind of like around 500, and they're like, yeah, maybe we could go for it, but this just doesn't. It just doesn't feel right this year. Like maybe we should just kind of.
Well, and Houston and Oakland are both good, so it's like.
Yeah, Houston is scary good, and Oakland is kind of doing the Moneyball Tampa thing, where they don't really have as many superstars, but they're just kind of getting it done with the right combination of platoons, and I'm sure there's some Moneyball skill that they've like pinpointed that is why they're winning without big names, but. You know, it's like them and the Rays. It's like the, you know, like whatever they did, it's genius.
Yeah, exactly.
Why?
I'm sure Houston will buy somebody. Like they, you know, they bodies are bodies. It's good to have a decent pitching. I think they need a little bit of pitching depth. So.
I think their rotation. It's pretty young once you get past Greinke. I think there's some like, there's a lot of you know. Like guys kind of having their first or second good season. So it wouldn't hurt him to have, you know, a really strong.
Yeah, because Verlander's injured, right?
I believe he's out for the year. So, you know, maybe a guy like Kyle Gibson would make sense for the Astros.
Yeah, if the Rangers want to trade him across the state.
Yeah. But, okay, do you think the whole Ranger or Astros cheating thing, does that make guys not want to sign with him, or do you think they don't care? Or someone had like 10-5 rights and they could veto a trade. Do you think anyone's like, I don't want to go play for that team?
I'm sure there's some of that. Yeah. I don't know how much of it there would be, but I'm sure there's a little bit of that, you know, floating around that there are guys who don't want to do that. But I think for the most part, you know, a decent number of people would just want to go to a winning team. And wouldn't necessarily be upset by the scandal from, you know, a couple of years ago now.
Yeah. Seems likely. I don't know. I'm just having trouble like putting my finger on what like, you know, like baseball insiders think about the whole thing. Cause like they never really got their chance to get booed. It kind of feels like they didn't, you know, get like punished all the way, but I just don't know how much people care about that anymore. If it's just kind of like, yeah, whatever. Or if it's like, you know, like we need to still do something about this. I don't know. I'm just curious what people think about that.
Yeah. All right, let's move to the National League, NL East. It really seems like, again, four teams kind of in contention, and then Miami.
I think it's the Mets division to lose. The Mets, they've kept winning despite crazy injuries. At one point, their batting order was like Frankie Lindor, then James McCann, the catcher, playing first, and seven dudes you either had never heard of or didn't realize were still in baseball. There's like Cameron Maybin and like just a bunch of dudes. You just were like, who is that? So I think just the fact that they got all those injured guys back, and they're pretty close to full strength now. I think Syndergaard is still out, and I think there's maybe a couple other key players, but like it's a pretty good team. And like I think Conforto was struggling for a while, but he's been pretty good lately too. So you know, I think they should more or less stay the course. You know, I could see him picking up a reliever, like a starter, like maybe an outfielder, like one difference maker in one of those places. But I think they're set up pretty well. I think they're going to win the division. So like they can kind of plan for the playoffs more than like planning to win out. If that makes sense. I don't even know if the planning process is different. But if you're planning for the playoffs, you might want to go for a starting pitcher, but those are expensive. So
yeah, I think they are also having a little trouble at like third base. They have like Jonathan Villar and JD Davis playing there. And JD Davis has been hitting well, but you know, in limited time, he's a platoon bat.
Yeah, has McNeil been playing third? Or
I think McNeil's also been playing a little bit of third. Yeah, but like he's, you know, then they don't have a second baseman, right? Like I think an infielder is sort of their area of need. You know, Chris Bryant is probably possibly moving. So that could be a fit.
He'd look great in any infield at any position. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, the other teams are in at least like even the Phillies, I don't know. There's a couple guys they could sell on. But I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. So NL Central.
NL Central. Pirates are bad and definitely going to sell. Cubs, it seems like, are going to sell, which is, you know, they're not that much worse than the Cardinals and Reds are right now, but it seems like the Cardinals and Reds are going to go for it a little bit more. Cardinals are a team that I don't think ever really are sellers. You know, they might do a little bit of like wheeling and dealing, and they sell somebody but also buy somebody. Yeah. But it's like they never seem to want to. Not that this is really a bad choice, but like the Cubs are a team that are a lot more comfortable with selling today to buy tomorrow, and yeah. I don't think the Cardinals are a team that likes doing that.
Yeah, I think I read the Cardinals have not had back-to-back losing seasons since like 1958-59 or something. Like they just don't do rebuilding periods.
Yeah.
Like whatever it is they're doing, they are never bad for more than 1 year at a time.
Yeah, I think the only losing season that I have known of Cardinals baseball it was 2007. Oh, 97, but I didn't live in St. Louis in 97. 99, sorry. 99 also. I did live in St. Louis in 99. So 75, 86, 99, and then 78 and 84 and 07, which was the year after they won the World Series. So yeah.
Hangover.
With an 83-78 record. Like it's
That was the wait, what? How
the 2005 NL Central was insanely good, and then the 2006 NL Central was shockingly bad. Who knows? Baseball, right? I don't think they're necessarily going to go to the postseason this year, which is shocking considering that Nolan Arenado got picked up in the offseason. I also don't think Nolan Arenado is a guy who's going to opt out this year, even though a lot of Cardinals Twitter is fretting about that. Mm-hmm. So Milwaukee and Cincinnati. Milwaukee is leading the division right now. I think Cincinnati still believes in themselves to be able to win the division. They're 6.5 games back.
Yeah, I know 6.5 doesn't sound like much, but like that's a lot at this stage in the game.
I don't think they're going to win, but I think still think that they're going to, because I don't think that, you know, the wild card teams are better than the division.
Yeah. Basically, at this point, it's the Dodgers and Padres, and then the Reds are the only other team above 500, and then it's just a bunch of like losing teams.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, and the Reds are what, 46? Yeah, they're only four losses back from the Padres, So it's not insane, but the Padres are a much better team.
Better team. They're a better team. Yeah.
And they just, you know, acquired Frazier, and I don't know who the Reds are acquiring, and their pitching staff isn't very good this year. So yeah, I would say forget about.
Yeah. And their bullpen, much like the Cardinals, is not good. It's like, and it's tough to make a decent postseason run without a good bullpen, which the Brewers do have. The Brewers have a good bullpen. They have a solid rotation. Like, I think, you know, they might pursue a bat. Jackie Bradley Jr. is a good defender who can't hit a lick. I'm not sure who they have at third base. It was Travis Shaw until he went on the IL. So I think they're just sort of have a parade of guys at third base. So, you know, that might be. Keston Hiura is a guy who has been playing first base for them, is not good. As somebody who never thought Keston Hiura was very good, I feel a little vindicated that he's been terrible this year. yeah, so I think, you know, a decent middle of the order bat might be something that the Brewers pursue, a Gallo or like a, you know, if the Cubs want to trade in division, Chris Bryant, I don't think the Cubs like to trade in division. But somebody like Gallo would be a solid fit for Milwaukee.
It's nuts. The NL right now, like the playoff slots are like 99% set in stone. Like that's in the East, Brewers in the Central. And I'm not sure who's going to win the West.
Three teams in the West are pretty much the three playoff teams, and whichever one wins the division, and the other two are going to be wild cards. It seems like.
Yeah, there's probably a 95% chance that those five teams will be the playoff team.
So speaking of the West, Colorado and Arizona are both bad and going to be moving players.
Who's worth moving on those teams?
Merrill Kelly is pretty good.
Okay, but he's too young, I would think, right? This is his first like big season.
I think it's his first big season, but I think he's been around.
Is he okay? Yeah. I don't know what it is about the Diamondbacks, but I just like, I don't know, being a Cleveland fan, I just, you know, we don't play them. I just don't think about those teams very much.
Merrill Kelly is ARB eligible next year.
Okay.
But also signed one of those like rookie extensions.
Mm-hmm.
So he costs $4.5 million this year, even though he's pre-ARB.
Okay.
He's also 32 years old.
Wow, he is 32. Man, I didn't know he was that old. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe he's just one of those weird guys. I think he was around for a lot. He was in the minors for like 8 years.
Yeah. Damn, this team is bad. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Just like Joaquin Soria is their closer. Trade him. Someone could use him. He's having a decent year. He's got a 390 FIP. I don't know. Like that'll play in some setup role somewhere. I don't know. Don't really see any.
No. Colorado, you know, we'll see if they move Trevor Story at the deadline or wait till the offseason. I think people are talking about like an extension, but I don't see Trevor Story wanting to extend with the Rockies, especially after Arenado just walked out on the team because of how messy the, you know, ownership and running of the team has been.
Yeah, you know, Blackman is having an all right season. He could work in center field somewhere, or I guess I don't think he's like considered a good center fielder anymore. Never mind.
Somewhere in the outfield though, corner outfield.
Yeah, he could play.
He could be a decent center fielder if you need him, but yeah, right field is where he's playing for Colorado now.
Yeah, CJ Krohn, like he'll hit 30 homers this year. Like someone could use that power at first. I never know what to think about Rockies pitchers, but I feel like if a pitcher can have a sub-4 ERA at Coors Field, he's probably pretty good, right?
Yeah, well, John Gray is good. He's just like, you know, again, he's been toiling on the Rockies for 7 years or whatever. So, and that's a dude who is a free agent next year. So I think that's another guy who could very well move.
But at the same time, if the Rockies find a guy that can pitch at Coors, shouldn't they just throw money at him? Because like, they're still figuring out like,
well, they did. I think they did give him some sort of extension, but they didn't. I'm thinking of Herman Marquez, who is their ace right now. And he's signed through 2023 with a team option in 2024.
Okay. They need to give these guys like real money. I mean, man, if you can find,
I think it's possible that John Gray just didn't want to sign an extension, you know?
Yeah, maybe. If I were a good pitcher, I would never sign a contract for Colorado.
Exactly.
Like you can't make the Hall of Fame pitching in Colorado. You just can't. Like, you just won't have the numbers for it.
Michael Gibbons is a bullpen piece who has been good this year for them and has been good in the past for other teams, yeah, for Baltimore. So I think that could be another guy who moves.
Yeah, Daniel Bard. He's their closer right now. Yeah, I could see him going to a contender.
They've got a handful of decent pieces that is kind of not surprising that they're bad, but it's surprising that they're terrible. Like,
yeah.
On paper, they look like a team that should be hovering around 500, maybe just because they play so many big games against good teams. But
yeah, those other three NL West teams. Yeah. Carlos Estevez, that's Charlie Sheen's real name.
That is correct. Yes.
So that's kind of,
I love that. Yeah. It's amazing. I think he does walk out to Wild Thing.
Oh, good. Yeah.
At least he did at some point, which is like, if your name is Carlos Estevez, I feel like you have to.
You better, but yeah, you're right. I think the Rockies need to do whatever it takes to lock up guys like Marquez and Gray who can pitch in Coors, and then just kind of trade these relievers that are having decent years, because like you don't need them.
As far
relievers are fickle.
Yeah, as far as the top of the division buyers, I'm sure San Francisco will buy somebody. Who knows what's happening in San Francisco? How that's working? It's just they're just doing it.
San Diego,
they already said bought Adam Frazier.
The Padres and the Dodgers, they just both seem so good. Like, why? Well,
I think the Dodgers definitely need a starting pitcher. We didn't really talk about Trevor Bauer earlier, at the hearing and whatnot, but they need to replace that. Clayton Kershaw's injured. Dustin May had Tommy John at the beginning of the year, so he's gone. Okay, I think that's the piece that they'd probably be looking for is some sort of starting pitcher just to fill out the rotation. Not that they need an impact pitcher. They just need a decent pitcher, a good pitcher that can fill out that rotation. Because right now it's Walker Buehler, Julio Urias, Tony Gonsolin, who are all very young guys. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good point. That is not a very good rotation. I forgot about Bauer and Kershaw, those guys.
Price has had six starts this year.
Yeah.
And he's he's actually not been bad this year, but.
Is he still good? I can't figure out how good he is.
I don't think he's still good, but I think he's, he's one of those guys who he's still David Price, right? So even if he's bad, he's still got
number three.
The capability of being a good pitcher.
Yeah.
But yeah, like right now with Kershaw injured and Bauer probably not pitching again this year, if ever, they definitely need somebody like some sort of veteran presence in the rotation, I would say is probably their goal. Let me see. The last three appearances for David Price is as a starter. So he has, I think, officially joined the rotation. Three innings, four innings, five and two thirds. Cause he came into the season as a reliever. So he's, his other couple starting appearances are as an opener.
Yeah.
I think they're sort of out. Stretching him back out to actually start baseball games. And he's been decent. The three inning start, no earned runs, the four inning start, one earned run, the five and two thirds inning starts, three earned runs, which is not ideal. But like, again, if you need the body, you need the body.
So. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Definitely could use a starting pitcher there, but man, their batting order is quite good. And I think they'll be okay. Not super worried about them.
Yeah.
And then the Padres also, they went out and got, Yu Darvish and Snell, and they're scary good. I'm surprised they're only in third place, but I think they're definitely set up to succeed in the playoffs.
It's just it comes back to, as always, the strange San Francisco Giants season this year.
Yeah,
nobody saw coming.
Like you look at this lineup, and the names you recognize, like Belt, Crawford, Longoria, are all on the DL, and then you got Buster Posey, who's good, but then. Like Wilmer Flores and Steven Duggar, was he on like one of those, is he on John and Kate plus eight or whatever? one of those reality shows.
Yeah,
just a bunch of no namers killing it in the rotation.
And they're old. Like they're like the oldest or like second oldest team in the majors on average.
It shouldn't be, but it is.
Yep. All right. Before we wrap up and move on to the trivia, I'm gonna toss a couple names at you and ask you where you think they land, if at all. So Trevor Story, where do you think he goes?
An infield. I think the Reds need a shortstop bad. They're playing Eugenio Suarez there.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if the Reds picked him up. The Mets could, they just lost Lindor. I can see them shopping for a shortstop. So I don't know. Those two.
Yeah. I think I agree. Reds, Mets, Oakland, maybe, he's a good bat. They don't have Marcus Semien anymore. So that could be and it's a rental, so it's like they're not worried about, you know, having to pay him next year. They'll have him for half a season, and then he'll go somewhere and get paid money.
Yeah, but we'll see. Yeah, hopefully Story ends up somewhere on a playoff team. He's been suffering in Colorado for a long time.
Chris Bryant.
Yeah, I could kind of see him at Mets. Mets, I think, makes sense. Mets have Mets can pay him. Mets can stick him right at third base. I don't know. That kind of strikes me as a pretty logical destination.
Yeah, I think probably I would agree. Mets make the most sense as a destination for someone like that. Craig Kimbrel?
Kimbrel, you know, like how many teams could use a guy like him?
30?
All 30. Yeah,
15 if we're talking about teams that might actually have a chance at winning a, you know, playoff spot.
Yeah. I mean, maybe the Blue Jays, they're bullpen has been kind of like their rotation isn't great either, but like they could use a guy like Kimbrel. I can see the Yankees picking him up, although he'd have to shave, but you know, so it goes. He'd look like he's about 12 years old.
Maybe Boston.
Yeah, maybe back to Boston. Wouldn't shock me.
Starling the Marlin
could be an outfielder. I don't know, maybe the Giants. I mean, their outfield is a bunch of no-namers. It's Yaz and
that makes sense.
Maybe they could use a little bit of a reliable guy like him to kind of even things out.
And then Jonathan Scope.
He's like a former second baseman who's like, I don't know where he really fits because he's been playing a lot of first base, right?
Yeah, I think he's playing a lot of first base, but I think it's just because they have a guy who plays second base who they want to keep around, and Scope was a guy who they didn't expect to matter this year.
Yeah, kind of reminds me of maybe like Daniel Murphy when he was a little older, back when he was like, he had a second baseman's bat, but like a first baseman's glove, and it's like, I just don't know where a guy like that, I don't know who has an opening for that skill set. Again, the Mets infield being...
I think Scope does have a second baseman's glove. Like he's... In previous years, he's been a pretty league average second baseman. I think they just slid him over because they wanted to, you know, they had a young guy, Willie Castro, who has shifted over from shortstop because they had Nico Goodrum, I guess. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. I'm looking at Scope's stats and he does profile as at least an average second baseman. I just sort of assumed he was losing it because he got,
they moved him to first. Yeah.
But yeah, maybe not.
I think it's just that his bat suddenly started playing and they're like, oh, well, I guess let's find space for him.
Yeah. Well, like you were saying earlier, like Keston Hira moved from second to first and he sucks. So maybe this could be an upgrade of a second baseman playing first.
Well, first baseman, right? Because they have Colton Wong at second base, who is hitting this year and also is the best at fielding. Yeah. He's the best. I love him. Yeah, I miss him so much.
Yeah, he's great. maybe he might make sense in Milwaukee. I'm not sure what Milwaukee's infield looks like exactly, but besides those two guys, but like I think he could kind of help shore up there. I think he used to play on the Brewers a couple of years ago too, so yeah, that might make sense. But yeah, he's kind of got an unusual skill set, but if he can play decent second base, I think he could find a spot somewhere.
All right, last name, and then we'll move on. Whit Merrifield.
What, dude, that guy is so good. He could just slide in anywhere. He can play any position.
Yep.
What's he? 24-1 in steals.
Which is weird because he's not crazy fast. I think he's just a smart base runner.
Exactly. he can play literally any position.
25-1 Yeah.
Yeah. Like, man, I can't think of a team that couldn't use him.
Maybe. Mets, I think Mets would love like that guy. That's
yeah. He would,
he profiles right really well for them.
Yeah. He could play outfield if, you know, they aren't happy with Nemo and Conforto or, you know, what you were saying earlier about the White Sox needing, because Madrigal got injured. He could maybe pop in the infield there. But yeah. True. Literally every team, like he can play anywhere, and his bat and his speed will play anywhere you put him, and his glove. He can do it all. So like, yeah, just, I like, it'd be easier to come up with a team that couldn't use him.
Fair point. All right. Well, that is all of our sort of trade deadline preview. I think it went a little longer than we had planned, but that's fine. We give you so much content here at the R Baseball Weekly Podcast.
Welcome.
Deej, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Kuhan. It was great to see you. Great to talk to you.
Looking forward to this week. Yeah, me too. Lots of moves happening. What we're going to talk about now, we're going to kick it to Andy with more trade deadline trivia. You're going to hear a little bit about moves from the past. And next week, we will talk about how wrong we were in our preview just now.
Yeah.
Hello, everybody. It's Andrew back with another round of trivia. I've got my two usual guests at this point. They're basically my go-tos when I need a couple people to do trivia, because they're always willing to do trivia and they're also smart as hell. So we've got Jordan and we've got Jeremy. So Jordan, why don't you just give us a quick introduction? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hey, this is Jordan. Love doing this. I live in Wisconsin. I'm a Brewers fan. I work in the dairy industry. And I just love baseball. Nothing simpler than that.
I'm not going to make the Wisconsin dairy industry joke again, because I think I've made that pretty much every single time you've been on here. And yep. it's only going to get a laugh for so long. So.
Oh yeah.
And Jeremy, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
All right, my name is Jeremy, a Chicago native, relocated to Georgia in December. I run a little trivia company called Brain Bash Trivia. I love baseball, love the Cardinals, even though this year has been just difficult to watch. Carlos Martinez should not be in the majors.
So yeah, we got another round of 10 questions. We've got the usual format that we usually do. However, this time I'm going to be passing the reins over to Jeremy. So it's going to be Jeremy hosting, and I'll let Jordan kick my ass this time. Usually him and Jeremy are beating each other up, but I'll take over for one round. So Jeremy, why don't you take us away?
All right. Well, last time we did All-Star Game trivia, the trade deadline is looming. We're all wondering who might get traded when. So I've got around 10 questions all about memorable or maybe not so memorable baseball trades. They're not necessarily trade deadline trades, but they're all trades. Our midpoint does have nothing to do with trades, but
all right.
Here we go. Question number one. Glenn Davis was a 29-year-old budding superstar first baseman when the Astros traded him away in January of 1991. Davis fizzled out and played only three more years in the majors, hitting a total of 24 home runs over those three seasons, never coming close to the all-star form he showed early in his career. The three men that Davis was traded for all had longer careers, and between them, they hit over 300 home runs, stole over 300 bases, won over 300 games, and struck out over 4,400 batters for 5 points each. Name these three players who all made at least one All-Star game after getting traded for Davis.
I know one for sure.
I do too.
I was hoping you were just going to look for the one that I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
You didn't give teams, right?
I did not. I mean, if you know who Glenn Davis was traded to, you know who.
I know one of the teams that was involved. I'm not entirely sure where the players.
Oh, I did say the Astros. So I said Glenn Davis was traded from the Astros.
Okay.
Yeah. So he went somewhere, and the team that he was traded to is the one that, yeah.
I think I might know a second.
I do too. I think so as well.
I think I might know all three. I guess I'll lock in.
All right, Jordan, you want to talk her out? Let me know which two do you know and which one are you trying to figure out?
I think the two I know are Curt Schilling and Steve Finley. But the third one I can't think of right now. I know it's not Biggio because he was a draftee. I don't know. Maybe not Bagwell then. No, I was thinking Bagwell, but that was Red Sox. I don't know why, but Lyle Moton is in my head. So I'm going to go with Schilling, Finley, and Moton.
All right. And Andrew, what do you got for me?
Yeah, Schilling was the one I knew for sure. For some reason, I thought Brady Anderson was in that trade. I know it was from the Astros to the Orioles, and then Schilling was very briefly an Oriole, and he went to the Phillies and then did the rest of his career. Also, for some reason, I feel like Pete Harnisch was in that trade. So I'm going Schilling, Brady Anderson, and Pete Harnisch.
Well, between the two of you, you got all three. You're both getting 10 points. Curt Schilling and Pete Harnisch were the two pitchers who combined for over 300 games won and 4,400 strikeouts. And Steve Finley, the Saluki, had over 300 home runs and 300 stolen bases. He was the outfielder in that deal. So you're both at 10 points for that question.
Awesome.
All right. Question number two. In a 19-year career, this journeyman pitcher played for 8 teams and was traded 7 times. The first time he was traded was after his rookie season when he was part of a 6-player deal that involved a man who had just hit his 500th career home run. The last time he was traded, it was straight up for a minor league pitcher who would end up with over 3,000 strikeouts. For 10 points, name this oft-forgotten pitcher who won nearly 200 games in his career, and for an additional 5 bonus points each, name the 2 Hall of Fame players he was traded for, one at the start and one at the end of his career.
I'm locked in.
All right, Jordan's locked in.
I'm locked in with 2 of the names.
You said the Hall of Famer hit 500 home runs?
He had just recently hit his 500th home run right before this pitcher was traded for him, yes, in a 6-player deal at the beginning of his career.
I know the answer, and then I know the pitcher he was traded for who had the 3,000 strikeouts, and I could have sworn I was thinking of a different player that he got traded for at the end of his career, but I know this guy didn't have 500 home runs.
Well, I mean, if you know the trade at the end of the career, do a little math. He had a 19-year career.
Yeah. There's only so many guys that hit 300, that hit 500 home runs back in the 70s, 60s, 70s-ish. All right, I guess I'll lock in.
And Jordan, you had 2 out of the 3. Have you locked into the third one yet, or are you still?
Yeah, I believe I have.
All right, well, Jordan, why don't you go ahead and give me what you got, and then we'll see what Andrew's got.
So the 19-year veteran was Doyle Alexander, who was traded straight up to the Tigers from the Braves for John Smoltz. The 500 home run hitter, because I believe his first season was 1970 for Doyle Alexander. That leaves kind of, I don't think it was Harmon Killebrew, but he seems the closest to that time period. So I'm going to go with Harmon Killebrew, but I know it's not right.
All right, Andrew, what do you got?
Yeah, I had the same answers. I knew Doyle Alexander was traded straight up for John Smoltz in 87 or 88. Okay.
I believe it was 87 because Doyle Alexander was actually a beast for him down the stretch.
He went 9-0 in 11 starts or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That trade gets looked over as like, oh, the Tigers traded a Hall of Famer for half a season of Doyle Alexander, but he basically dragged them to the playoffs that year. So that's, it wasn't a terrible trade.
Yeah.
He won the AL East by 4 games over the Brewers.
Yeah, and he was the reason they did it. I mean, like, you know, they didn't obviously win the series or anything or even get there, but they wouldn't have been in the playoffs without Doyle Alexander. And he stuck around, I think, played 2 more years for him.
Yeah,
I think so.
But anyway, and who was your 500 homer guy?
I could have sworn the Hall of Famer he was traded for was Ted Simmons, but I know Ted Simmons didn't hit 500 home runs. So I went with Harmon Killebrew as well.
So, Doyle Alexander, John Smoltz, of course, a very, very famous trade. However, in December of 1971, Doyle Alexander, who had come up with the Dodgers.
Yep, I knew that
was
part.
Traded to the Orioles Frank in a Robinson. Six-player deal that involved Frank Robinson, yep. who had just Frank recently Robinson. Hit his yep. 500th home run.
Yep.
So you're both getting 10 points, and through two questions, we are tied up at 20. All right, question number three. Bob Sykes was a 19th round draft pick of the Detroit Tigers in 1974. With the Tigers, Sykes made 30 starts and won 11 games over two seasons. He was then traded to the National League, where he made 31 starts over the next three seasons and won another 12 games. After the 1981 season, Sykes was again traded, this time to the Yankees, for a little-known outfielder who had never played above double-A ball. Sykes never again pitched in the majors, and the outfielder he was traded for went on to be a four-time All-Star who won three Gold Gloves, two batting titles, and a league MVP award while amassing over 2,000 career hits. For 10 points, who did Sykes get traded for?
A Yankees prospect that was traded to a National League team and won an MVP.
And two batting titles. And three Gold Gloves, yeah, four All-Star titles, games. Gold Gloves,
All-Stars, MVPs.
Like the MVP list is a lot easier to go through.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm the MVPs that I assume won enough. The National League in the 80s, early 90s.
That would make some sense that considering he was traded in 1981. You know?
Yeah. And I'm assuming this guy won in the National League. I don't know if he got traded to the American League.
I will tell you, almost all of the achievements I listed outside of the 2,000 career hits were with the team he was traded to.
Okay.
And obviously, some of those 2,000 career hits came with other teams later in his career. Okay. But, you know.
All right. And I got a few guys that the Yankees very notably traded around that time, but I know the two I'm thinking of didn't win an MVP.
I'm having a hard time thinking of 80s MVPs.
But yeah, that's from what I'm going through all the 80s MVPs and early 90s MVPs, and I'm getting a handful of them, but I know none of them fit. Oh, I know it. All right, I'm locked in.
Jordan, start talking. Let's hear your thought process. So
Mike Schmidt won three MVPs in the 80s, and it's clearly not him. And they were 80, 81, and 86, I want to say. This is where I can't remember any of the freaking 80s MVPs. In the 90s, you had Barry Bonds for a few, and it's not him. He was a first-round pick by the Giants. Or by the Pirates, excuse me, yeah.
Out of Arizona State.
Yes. I'm trying to think of the players that cycled through the Yankees, but not that were traded for other minor players. I'm reminded of Frank Costanza. Why'd you trade Ken Phelps?
For Jay Buhner. my baseball people kept saying Ken Phelps. He had 30 home runs and over 100 RBIs. You don't know what the hell you're doing.
So I don't know why, but Dave Winfield is coming through my head, but I don't think he won an MVP in the 80s. But like that was the opposite direction. I am so drawn to blank right now. I got nothing.
All right.
Tap it out. Andrew, what do you got?
All right. So I went through first. I was going through notable prospects that the Yankees traded that became stars. And I immediately thought of Jay Buhner. He was a little too. This was too early for him. And I know he never won an MVP. We also notably traded Fred McGriff early in his career, and same with him. And then I started going through 1980s MVPs, and I was thinking of Kurt Gibson, who had only ever played for the Yankees, Andre Dawson, who I know won 8 or 9 Gold Gloves. And then out of nowhere, it kind of hit me, and then I realized, oh, wait, Jeremy's hosting, so he's probably going to ask something to do with the Cardinal. And I know Willie McGee won a couple of batting.
That's it.
I'm pretty sure he took the Yankees at one point, so I'm going with Willie McGee.
It is, in fact, 1985 NL batting champ and MVP Willie McGee.
Was 1985 the year he got traded but still won the batting title because he had enough at bats in the NL?
That was 1990.
He's one of the two guys who have a batting title, but it's in italics and not bolded.
Yeah.
The other is Eddie Murray.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Eddie Murray had the highest batting average in the majors that year.
But didn't qualify.
But no, he qualified. He had the highest batting average in the majors that year. He qualified for the batting title, but he didn't win it because Willie McGee had a higher average in the National League before he got traded to the A's.
Gotcha.
And then his average for the season cumulatively was below Murray's, but the only thing that counted for the NL batting title was the fact that it was his average with the Cardinals. So, like,
gotcha.
You know, yeah, like I think Eddie Murray, I think, batted something like 327.
330.
Willie McGee, 330? Okay.
330. And, I just looked at this yesterday.
Yeah. And Willie McGee batted something like 327 overall, but 332 with the Cardinals.
Gotcha.
So he won the NL batting title and lost. Yeah. But Eddie Murray had the high. Eddie Murray won the Major League batting title, played the whole year with the Dodgers, and did win the National League batting crown.
And I think there have been players, I know in 2012, I want to say, Melky Cabrera was leading the league. And that was the year he got suspended for steroids. And not only did he didn't finish with enough at-bats, but I believe if he had enough hitless at-bats and added to his total, he would have won. But he also kind of self-forfeited it because, you know, he tested positive for steroids and you know, you're not going to take a batting title. You're not going to accept a batting title if you do that.
Yeah. All right. Well, well done, Andrew, picking up 10 points pulling into the lead after three.
I was able to pull that one.
Willie McGee. All right. Question number four. Sammy Sosa hit 609 home runs in his steroid-fueled career. Before he bulked up with the Cubs, he was traded twice early on in his playing days, both in deals involving multiple players. Two of the men Sosa was traded for were also sluggers, who between them hit 640 career home runs, each of them having hit at least 250 for their career, one of whom actually made it to Cooperstown, which Sosa has thus far failed to get into. Name these two men, both with at least 250 career home runs, that at one point or another were involved in trades for Sammy Sosa. 5 points per correct answer.
All right, I know one for sure.
I just know the teams he was traded from and to right now.
Yeah, again, you said two players.
I think I have one name as well.
When you said two players, I think I know two players he was traded for, but I know one of them didn't make the Hall of Fame. And I know one for sure.
Yeah, only one of these guys is a Hall of Famer. One didn't make the Hall of Fame, but both have at least 250 career
home runs. Yeah, I've got two guys I'm thinking of. One I know is a slugger. For sure. And there was another guy I think he got traded with in the trade I'm thinking of, but neither made the Hall of Fame that I'm thinking of.
And between the two of them, they have 640 career home runs, which is more than Sosa 609. But Andrew, you have them both, or are you
You just said in general, Sosa was traded for these guys. You didn't necessarily specify it was in the same trade.
No, they were two different trades. I will specify they were not in the same trade.
Okay.
And said before they were on the Cubs. Sosa was on the Cubs.
Well, I mean, I said early in his career. So his you can make that assumption, and it's probably accurate.
Yeah.
It is accurate, you know. I mean, one of them was the trade to the Cubs. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Sosa was traded a total of three times in his career. And – you know, once was off the Cubs and twice was before he was on the Cubs. So, you know.
Yeah. Right. I was trying to think of guys, because I know later in his career he played for the Orioles and Rangers real quick.
Yep.
I'm trying to think of one of those guys maybe he got traded for that was a Hall of Famer. But if you said it was early in his career, then that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
One of the guys is in Cooperstown, huh?
I think I have the name that is not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I definitely have that one.
Yeah.
Are you locked in or are you still thinking?
I'm still thinking.
Okay, cool. Me too. I don't think I know it now at this point. I'm just trying to think of a logical, reasonable Hail Mary guess that I know for a fact isn't incorrect.
Right. I'm going to lock in with two educated guesses, but not. Okay.
So Andrew, talk her out.
Yeah. So I know one of the guys is George Bell.
All right.
I want to say the other guy he got traded for, I know he's not a Hall of Famer. I want to say his name was Manrique. Fred Manrique, is that a real person?
That is a real person.
Okay, I know he's not a Hall of Famer, so that's not what I'm going with.
Yeah.
I have absolutely no idea. I was thinking, just shot in the dark, maybe Trevor Hoffman floated around with a couple teams before he came up. So I'm going George Bell and Trevor Hoffman. Because I got nothing.
Right. I got half of nothing. Jordan, what's your educated guess?
George Bell No. Yeah, George Bell. But I'm trying to think of the other.
You should be locked in already.
I know, yeah. But it's like I can't think of his name.
Well,
what was the name you were thinking of when you locked in?
Yeah.
Robin Ventura at some point, but no.
All right. If that's what you're locked in with, that's what you locked in with.
Robin Ventura and George Bell, but it's not
so,
right.
So George Bell is, in fact, correct. That's who the Cubs traded to the White Sox to get Sammy Sosa. Fred Manrique, good pull. Fred Manrique was one of the three players the White Sox traded to the Rangers to get Sosa, along with Scott Fletcher and future Hall of Famer and 384 career home run hitter Harold Baines.
Harold Baines.
So both of you pick up 5 points.
Texas Rangers and White Sox.
Yeah. And after, by the way, that's when the White Sox traded Baines to the Rangers and then retired his number three. And then Baines still played another decade.
Every time he's come back, he's been issued the number three, including as a coach.
Yeah. Yeah. So they retired his number while he was still active, and then he came back to the team. So they had, of course, unretire it because he had to wear it again. But
Harold Baines is that guy where it's like he's the guy who tests the limits of how many hits you can get and still make the Hall of Fame despite not really being that good.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was solid very player. Good, but you know, like, yeah,
not a Hall of Famer.
It's funny. I once. So I'm a very good trivia player. I am.
Yes.
And baseball trivia, I would say I'm an exceptional elite trivia player. Right?
I would agree with you.
But I hang out with people like, you know, not I'm gonna you know brag, whatever you want to call it, but like I've been at events with like Ken Jennings and Brad Rutter and James Holden. Not that they're like close personal friends or whatever, but these are the type of people that I'm like floating in the circles of, right? Hmm. And somebody once said, oh, you're a great trivia player. I said, I am the Harold Baines of trivia. I have a really nice, solid career. I put up some really good numbers. You look at me and someday if somebody has enough pity, they'll put me in the Hall of Fame, but I ain't nowhere near the elite players that are truly deserving of that.
If there's a baseball trivia Hall of Fame, you're a first ballot guy.
Well, yes, if it's just based, but I'm talking about overall trivia, right? You know, I'm not there, and I'm well aware of that. But I mean, I think Harold Baines is a great player. You know,
he was a 20 homer, 90 RBI, 280 guy for 23 years.
Yeah, he's just worse than basically every other Hall of Famer. Yeah,
he was a DH, though. In terms of wins above replacement, he's got nothing.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, that trade with the Rangers. Speaking of Ken Jennings and trivia luminaries, Ken Jennings' book, like the Brainiac trivia book, whatever, somebody gave that as a gift to me, like, 15 years ago or whatever it was when it first came out. And like, I happened to open it up, and one of the first pages I opened to, he's talking about the Sammy Sosa trade to the Rangers. Like the Rangers, and he says Sammy Sosa was traded for George Bell from the White Sox to the Rangers. And like, I was like, no. He was traded from the White Sox to the Cubs for George Bell. He was traded from the Rangers to the White Sox for Fred Manrique, Scott Fletcher, and Harold Baines. And I knew that cold. And I emailed Ken Jennings. This is before I'd ever met the man, before I knew any of these trivia, titans. And he emailed me back and he was like, you're right. I got that wrong. And I was like, wow, all right. I also tried to correct him on something else, which I won't tell you, but I was completely wrong. And he's like, by the way, you're wrong. I'm right. Here's why. And I was like, I suppose you are right. Oh, well. Here's question number 5.
All right.
Mark Langston, Freddie Garcia, and Javier Vasquez all won at least 150 games in their major league careers, and all were at one point in those careers traded for what future Hall of Famer?
Locked in.
Oh.
Yep, that's an easy one.
Wait, so you said this was for a future Hall of Famer?
Yep.
Okay. It's hard to know when Vasquez was not traded mid-season. He was traded between seasons. So it was a little harder to pinpoint who he was traded for because I didn't really start paying attention to off-season trades until I was really on social media. I'm going to lock in.
All right. Who you locking in with, Jordan?
Ricky Henderson.
All right, and Andrew, who all is right. the answer?
So Mark Langston. I might have the teams and timelines mixed up, but I know 100% who the player is. Mark Langston, I want to say, was traded from the Mariners to the Expos. Freddy Garcia was traded from the Astros to the Mariners, and Javier Vasquez was traded from the Yankees to the Diamondbacks for this guy right here, Randy Johnson.
Oh, Randy. Okay.
It is, in fact, Randy Johnson, and I believe all of the information you just gave is, in fact, correct.
Cool.
All righty.
For the only time that he wore a number other than 51.
Yeah, he was 41 with the Yankees because Bernie 41. Williams had 51.
Yep.
Did he work with the with the Giants too, right?
I think he was 51.
Was he?
Because I don't think they have that number retired or an active player wasn't wearing it.
Yeah, I don't know why he wouldn't have been 51 with the Giants, but I don't actually remember. But I would assume he was. Anyway, but it is, of course, Randy Johnson.
The large unit.
The big
he
unit.
Did wear 51 with he also wore 34 with the Mariners for a bit in 93.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I remember when Ichiro came up, he wore 51, and he like promised to like bring respect to the number or something. Yeah. They hadn't retired it yet, and it was like it was kind of in number limbo, and they gave it to Ichiro, and he was like had a lot of pressure, and then of course he won the MVP in his rookie season, so that everyone kind of forgot that this random player who just came over from Japan and was unproven, and no one knew who he was going to be, and then all of a sudden he's probably more of a folk legend in Seattle than Randy Johnson ever was.
Oh, God, for sure.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
All righty. So we have hit our midpoint. The score right now is Andrew 45, Jordan 25.
Yep.
I do have a non-trade related list for you. It does relate to kind of the last question. Randy Johnson in his career, one of the most recent guys to get 300 wins, won 303 career games. I'm not interested in 300 game winners. No, I want the guys who failed to win 300 games, but not by much. I've got a list of 24 players who won at least 250 games, but failed to win 300. I want you to take turns naming them. And I'm not going to flip a coin. I'm just going to say, Jordan, you are trailing. I'm going to give you the honors of going first. So go ahead and you can actually hold on. I'll give you one more bit of information. 15 of these 24 guys are Hall of Famers. 9 of them are not.
I know one Hall of Famer for sure. Non-Hall of Famer. Tommy John.
All right, Tommy John is correct. 288 wins.
Yeah, I had two names in mind right off the bat. Tommy John and I know CC Sabathia got to 250 right towards the end of his career. So CC.
CC Sabathia got 251.
Yep.
And someday may be in the Hall of Fame.
I think I think he will. He's got the 3,000 Ks. He's got the awards.
250 wins all this century. That's pretty impressive. The most of any pitcher, I think, that debuted in this century, So, all right, Jordan, you have another one for me.
I'm going to steal another Yankee from Andrew. Mike Mussina.
Yeah,
Hall of Famer Mike Mussina in mind with 270 career wins is correct.
With 20 in his final season.
20 in his final season. He sticks around another two. He's a 300-game winner, but he said, you know what, I'm done.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
He would have had a ring if he stuck around for another year, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was another guy I had I had thought of right when I was thinking of CeCe. All right, I don't think Bob Gibson got to 300. I'll say Bob Gibson.
He did not get to 300. He in fact tied CeCe Sabathia with 251. So he is by two wins in this club. You are still alive. All right, Jordan.
I think I'm going to go with another Bob. Bob Feller.
Bob Feller. 266. I'm like, why do I not see his name on my list?
I know he missed some time due to the service.
But he has 266 wins in 18 seasons. That is correct. Sorry.
He had 11 seasons under his belt by the time he got in the war or something like that. He had several.
All right, Andrew.
All right.
You got another one for me?
Yeah, I've got a few possibilities. I'm just going to try and see if I can get more and then find better ones. So I'm just going to, right, so I'm sure there's a handful of super old guys.
There's a few of those.
Try and tackle.
But there are some more modern guys on here.
Yeah. I know Bert Blyleven got to 3,000 strikeouts. I don't think he got to 300 wins. I think he's on there.
Bert Blyleven, Hall of Famer with 287 wins.
All right, nice. Wow.
Is correct.
Bert, I heart to fart Blyleven.
Yes, I love that shirt.
Or the Bert beat home by 11, if you want to go the Chris Berman route.
Yep.
All right, Jordan, you got one for me?
I feel like we didn't appreciate Chris Berman's puns at the time.
Probably.
As much as we should have now.
Yeah. All right. So, one of my favorite players to play with on the show, Jamie Moyer.
Mm.
Jamie Moyer, he played forever. 269 wins. He is on the list. Not a Hall of Famer, but, you know. I thought he was going to get to 300 for a while. I thought he was just going to keep coming back till he was like 60.
Yeah, he was like a cockroach. He just wouldn't go away.
Yeah.
I loved him, though. Yeah. 79-mile-an-hour
fastball. How do you not love a guy who's just sticking around doing something he loves?
He's like, got grandkids.
I loved him too. I wanted him to get to 300.
One of my favorite stories about him is he grew up in Philadelphia, went to the 1980 World Series parade as a teenager, and then was on the 08 team.
Yeah. Yeah. That is fantastic, actually. And the fact that he was a teenager at that 1981 and then 28 years later was on the team, you know? Like, it'd be one thing if, like, he was in, like, a newborn in, like, a cradle, you know, and his parents took him. But, no, he was old enough to go on his own.
Yeah.
All right, Andrew. All right. You got a fourth one for me?
Yeah. I didn't even think of this guy. Andy Pettit.
I was like, if you don't say him, I'm going to be shocked.
Yeah.
Especially after
why did it take
Tommy
so long
John,
to think Andy Pettit?
Especially after Andy John and CeCe Sabathia were the first two. I'm like, right, clearly somebody's just going to say Andy Pettit, right?
Yeah.
256 wins. That is, in fact,
I'm really
correct.
Tiptoeing that line, aren't I?
Yeah, you are, actually. But you know what?
I think every guy I guessed was between 250 and 260.
Blyleven was 287.
All right, so we got four each. Yeah.
You got four each, Jordan.
I think this is another one of the 3,000 strikeout member, but because he was on a lot of bad teams, he didn't amass all, but he was here a long time. Ferguson Jenkins.
284 wins. Mm. That is correct. On all counts. And another Hall of Famer off the list. Yep. It means you got 5 of the 15. There's 10 more Hall of Famers. Obviously, you're getting into the more deep cut Hall of Famers at this point. Well, there's still a couple of names that are familiar, but there's some deep cut Hall of Famers as well.
All right, I've got one more Hall of Famer on my list that I think is on there.
Right.
I'm gonna go the Dominican Dandy Juan Marichal.
That's like a two. Juan Marichal, 243 wins.
Oh, I was playing with fire for too long.
He's not on the list.
All right.
But Jordan, you can, if you got some more names, spit them out, add some more points, maybe catch back up a little bit.
I'm going to go another Philly. I don't think he got to 300 though. But I don't think he got to either 300 or 3000. Robin Roberts.
But he sure as heck walked a lot of guys and let up a lot of home runs.
Yes. All he did was throw fastballs.
286 Ooh, career nice. Wins. He is right in between Blyleven and Jenkins. He ranks 28th all time. That is correct. And he is, of course, a Hall of Famer. Can you keep it going?
I know.
Please don't.
I was thinking of a brother of a Hall of Famer, but I don't think this is correct. Joe Negro?
Joe Negro, the Negro brothers are the winningest brothers in Major League Baseball history, but Joe Negro only 221 wins.
Okay,
so the so you know, I can feel a little bit better about myself. I've got five other names written down.
All right, let's
tell me if any of these guys are on the list.
All right.
I've got Curt Schilling, I've got Whitey Ford, I've got Jack Morris, and I've got Bartolo Colon.
I think
so. Jack Morris is on that list. Jack Morris is 254.
That last guess, I was deciding between him and Marichan. I went the wrong guy.
Bartolo Colon is 247. So okay. He would have just missed. Who were the other guys you had on the list?
I said Schilling and Ford, but I thought they were more in the low 200s.
I think Schilling only has 216.
Schilling is in the low. He's 216. And Whitey Ford is 236.
Okay. All right. Okay. I feel better about getting Marichal wrong, but I would have gone Morris and then I would have been done.
All right. Now here's the big guys that you missed.
All right.
And this is one you should have had. 268 career wins, won World Series games in three different decades.
Jim
Hall
Palmer.
Of Famer. Jim Palmer is on the list. A guy with 283 wins, played forever, retired in the early 80s, and became a beloved announcer.
Oh, I think I know who you're thinking of.
Who is it?
Kitty Cat?
It is. Kitty Cat. Yeah, man who won a number of gold gloves too. Yeah.
Another Philly.
Yeah.
He was an Yankees broadcaster, too.
Those were the two probably biggest names that were like, aside from Jack Morris, that weren't said. The other real big name that wasn't said had one of the most memorable All-Star game appearances of all time when he struck out six future Hall of Famers in a row.
Carl Hubble,
253 career wins.
I figured like Flapjack McGillicuddy in 1874 won 250 games in like three seasons or something. But I wasn't going near any of those guys.
Two other Hall of Famers, both with colorful nicknames. In fact, the same colorful nickname.
Jack McDowell? No, not
colorful.
Yeah, Blackjack. They called him Blackjack.
Yes. What's another color that would be a good baseball player nickname?
Red.
Red Ruffing.
Red Ruffing and?
Red Barber?
Red Faber. Red Ruffing and Red Faber?
Red Ruffing I should have gotten, yeah.
Yeah, Red Ruffing and Red Faber.
Does he have the most starts for the Yankees in a World Series? I'm pretty sure.
I think it's Pettit. Actually.
Pettit.
Pettit's got the most postseason wins.
Yeah.
I think he's got the most postseason starts. Red Ruffing might have the most World Series starts.
The guy who is, I believe, the career leader in wins for the White Sox, Ted Lyons, is on the list. Might be a name you've heard of.
I've heard of. I wouldn't have guessed him.
Yeah. And then the rest of the guys are pretty tough. Here they are with 297 wins. Bobby Matthews.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
With 284 wins. Tony Mullane.
Nope.
With 270 wins. Hall of Famer. You've probably heard of Burleigh Grimes.
Last spitballer.
Yep. Yeah, with 206, well, Gaylord Perry.
Yeah, but the last legal spitballer.
Yeah, with 266 wins, another Hall of Famer, played for the Yankees as well. You might have heard of him, Epa Rixey. 265 wins, I believe one of the earliest Cy Young winners, Jim McCormick.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah,
with the Giants, right?
The one guy on here whose name does not even ring a bell with 67. Me, with 264 wins, Gus Wheeling. I'm guessing he must have been a 19th. W-E-Y-H-I-N-G. I'm guessing he must have been a 19th century.
Yeah, if I know that name, it's just because I've scrolled past it on Baseball Reference one of these days.
Yeah, exactly. and then definitely a 19th century guy, but a Hall of Famer and a name that'll jump. Al Spalding.
Oh, so okay.
Al Spalding.
Yep. That's the Spalding?
Yes.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yep. That is him.
Oh.
Yeah. He played 1871 to 1877. So he played 7 years and he won 252 games.
And then he moved on to basketballs.
Yeah, basically.
Sporting goods just in general.
Here are his year by year win totals. His rookie year 1974 38 41 52 54. Then 47, he took a little dip, and then he played one last year where he won only one game for the Cubs.
Yeah, he had a bout of tuberculosis in the year he only won 38. Yeah. He only threw 714 innings that year. He was a little slumped a little bit.
So interestingly enough, he won 19 games his rookie year, and he won more games in each year for his first six seasons in the majors.
Wow.
And, with a max of 54 in his sixth season in the majors.
Another 1800s baseball.
Yeah.
A name I'm surprised is not up there is Mark Burley.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he was just over 200, I think.
Yeah.
Because, you know, wins are hard to come by.
I know.
Yeah, I was trying to stay away from newer guys. Like I was thinking Verlander, but no. Wins just don't happen as much anymore.
At 226. I mean, he might get there. He might be the next guy or Zach Greinke at 216. Burley was at 214.
Yeah, we might not. We're not going to see a 300 game winner again. We might not even see a 250 game winner again.
I mean, yeah, it's going to be tough. Verlander might get to 250. Greinke's got an outside chance. The number three active guy is John Lester at 194, and Kershaw's at 183, and Scherzer at 181. I guess Kershaw could maybe get to 250.
Yeah,
but
he's he's on the IL every year pretty much for back spasms or something.
Already 33, and I mean it's gonna be tough. All right, so in the halftime, Jordan picked up 6. He's got 31. And Andrew, you picked up 4. You've got 49. Let's continue on with my wordy questions. All right, second half underway. Question number 6. This man spent 12 years as a second baseman with his original franchise. He won an MVP and helped them win their first World Series title in his final year with the team. He's unquestionably the greatest second baseman in this franchise's history. But when contract talks took a turn after that championship season, he got traded. In return, his original team got a veteran second baseman who spent another 11 years with that team, eventually becoming a player manager. He also won an MVP and helped the team win 2 more world championships and is probably the second best second baseman in that franchise's history. Both men are now in Cooperstown with the same hats on their plaque. Who are these 2 second basemen for 5 points each?
I think I have it locked in.
All right, Andrew, talk her out.
All right. Well, you got that a little quicker than I would have liked. I was hoping we could both sit around and hum and haw for a little while.
I know.
As opposed to you getting it immediately and me humming and hawing for myself for a little while.
I this is an educated guess. So I think it's pretty accurate, but I'm not 100% on it. I locked in because it made sense to me.
Let me just go the Jeremy route and go through every team. Let's see. It's not the Yankees. Probably not the Red Sox. Well, maybe the Reds. I mean, it depends on who you consider their best. I mean, Bobby Doerr is probably up there. You might consider Dustin Pedroia up there, but it's obviously not him. It's got to be an older person because they haven't really had player managers since, I think Pete Rose is the last
Pete
one.
Pete Rose.
Yeah. Orioles, Blue Jays. No, it's not the Rays.
Basically, just eliminate all expansion teams, probably.
You can't name both Rays Hall of Fame second baseman?
I was originally thinking the White Sox, but I know it's not the White Sox because I was thinking like Nelly Fox and then either Aparicio or Minoso, but I know none of those guys won with the White Sox because they played. I don't even think the White Sox have won 3 World Series in their franchise, but they definitely didn't win any in the 60s and 70s. And Fox, no, they had like an 80-year drought. They didn't win any in since like the 10s or the 20s. So definitely not them.
1917 was the last time White Sox before 05. Yeah.
And I was thinking the Indians, I was thinking Earl Averill might be in there, but I don't even think the Indians have won 3 World Series because they haven't won since 1946.
48.
A's had won a bunch. What do they have for good second baseman? It's obviously not the Mariners, not the Rangers, not the Angels. Maybe the Mets. I don't think it's the Mets. Not the Marlins, Nationals, not the Braves. There's always the possibility of Jeremy throwing in a Cardinals question in there. But they've won a whole bunch of World Series, so I don't know how I can narrow that down. Pirates. It's not obviously not the Brewers. Can't beat the Cubs. Unless they had 2 58-year careers shoehorned next to each other. not the Padres, not the Rockies. Crap. I'm sure there's some teams I've neglected to mention. I guess just to give some sort of educated guess. So I was thinking maybe it was the Yankees, but the two guys I'm thinking of are Lazzari and Joe Gordon, but there was a lot more than three World Series in those two guys' careers.
All right, you got anybody?
I'll go Lazzari and Gordon. I know, right, it's not
Jordan,
them.
But... Who did you come up with?
My two answers are Frankie Frisch and Red Shane Dienst.
Mm.
Oh.
Did I do the wrong order? Or like
No. Red Shane Dienst is probably the third greatest second baseman in this franchise's history. Frankie Frisch, the Fordham Flash, is the guy who won two World Series, was a player manager. So you're going to get 5 points. The guy he was traded for, the Raja, Rogers Hornsby.
Hornsby, yes. Okay, yep.
Who led the Cardinals to their first World Series.
I had the wrong pivot point.
No. Cardinals have had some good second basemen.
Yeah. Yes, they have.
Yeah. So 5 points to you, though. You got a little bit closer there with that one. Mm-hmm. It was, in fact, another Cardinals question. All right. Question number 7. In 1984, Eric Plunk was a minor league pitcher who was included as part of a 7-player deal involving a future Hall of Famer. 5 years later, he was a major league pitcher who was part of a 4-player deal for the same future Hall of Famer.
Oh.
Who was the Hall of Fame baseball player that Plunk was traded for? Not once, but twice.
I'm locked in.
I think I am too.
All right, Andrew, what do you got?
I think this one's Ricky Henderson.
Jordan?
I've got Ricky Henderson as well.
It is, in fact, Ricky Henderson.
Yep.
Traded from the Yankees to the A's and then back from the A's to the Yankees.
Yep.
Both in for Ricky Henderson.
I knew Eric Plunk was a Yankees farmhand in the 80s.
I think Greg Catterett was also involved in that trade.
I believe he was. Yeah.
You could field a decent 25-man roster of players Ricky Henderson has been traded for.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Question number 8. This 11-time All-Star spent time with 8 teams in his major league career. He had over 500 career home runs, but was traded 5 different times. While he's not yet in the Hall of Fame, 2 of the players he was traded for have been enshrined in Cooperstown. One a pitcher, the other a position player, both who rank among the greatest ever players at their positions. For 10 points, who is this oft-traded 500 home run man? And for 5 bonus points each, name the 2 Hall of Fame players for whom he was once traded.
I think I have, let's see. I think I have the player, the 500 homer player.
I think I might as well. I'm just jotting down
2 Hall of Famers that he was traded for.
Okay. Yeah. I think I have the player. Ooh, I have one of the players he was traded for. I think maybe.
I know I have one. I have one.
So you said there was a pitcher and a position player that this guy was traded for, and both the pitcher and position player were Hall of Famers?
Yes.
So you said, okay.
And both among the greatest at their positions all time.
Okay.
Okay, I have it.
All right, Andrew, talk it out.
Okay. So I am just about positive that the player you're looking for is Gary Sheffield. I know he played for 8 teams, the Padres, the Marlins, the Brewers, the Braves, the Tigers, the Yankees, the Mets, and the Dodgers. The order is completely off. I know he played for the Brewers, Marlins, Padres, time back in the early 90s. I'm going to say one of the guys he was traded for was Trevor Hoffman. And I want to say he was traded for Ivan Rodriguez later in his career. So I'll go Sheffield, and then he was traded for Hoffman and Pudge.
Okay. And Jordan, what do you have?
You got the wrong catcher.
Oh.
It is Mike Piazza.
He was in that trade.
Who are your 3?
Sheffield, Piazza, and Hoffman.
You will pick up all 20 all right. points there. Andrew, you will be getting 15.
All right. Yeah, I didn't think he was including that Hoffman in that Piazza trade. I knew it was Charles Johnson, Preston Wilson, I think was in there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't realize Sheffield was in there.
Yep. I just finished Michael Schiavone's book Dodgers. So and I remember that. Yep. So
all right. Question number 9. Dave Hollins, a 6th round draft pick of the Padres in 1987, made his major league debut in 1990 for the Phillies, and in 1993 made his lone All-Star team as a Philly, the Ryan LaHare of his day, if you will. Hollins had a 12-year major league career, played for seven teams, and was traded twice in that rather forgettable career. However, in July of 1995, he was traded by the Phillies to the Red Sox for hard-hitting Mark Witten. In 1996, he signed as a free agent with the Twins. And then on August 29th of 1996, he was traded to the Mariners for a player to be named later.
Two weeks later,
the Mariners sent that player to be named to the Twins.
Locked in.
Making him probably the most notable player to be a player to be named later.
Yeah, all right.
How about it? 1, 2, 3. You both say the answer here. What?
I've got a different name that I'm thinking of.
I know. So am I.
you want to go original name? All right. Let's. I assume you know the original name, right?
The beloved name. Okay.
The beloved name. Okay.
All right. 1, 2, 3.
David Ortiz.
Yep.
What would be the original name?
He was David Arias for a while.
Yeah, he was.
Well, yes,
but the beloved name
is Big Poppy.
Oh, Big Poppy. Okay.
No.
I mean, he's not beloved to me, so I'm saying his actual. I'm not using the name that people refer to him fondly as. Right.
I love the fact though that Big Poppy was once a player to be named. Like,
yeah. I think that was in the Mariners documentary that they did on YouTube last year.
Oh, the one that was it, John Boyes?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. David Americo Ortiz.
Yep.
The David Ortiz formerly known as David Arias.
Yeah, because I think that was his mother's maiden name.
Yeah, I know Hispanic naming rituals are a little bit different than ours. So he went by one name, and then went by a different name, and
Yep.
All right.
Your final question of the game going into it, Andrew, you have 84. Jordan, you have 76. I will tell you this question has five answers. They're going to be worth 5 points each.
Oh my.
So, you know, still is anybody's game. All right. July 29th, 1988.
Okay.
And August 30th, 1990.
All right.
The Boston Red Sox were involved in two memorable and or forgettable trades. All right. I want you to name the five men that were involved in these two deals. Okay. Now, there were three pitchers and there were two position players. The three pitchers have nearly 400 career wins and over 5,000 career strikeouts. The two position players have nearly 4,000 career hits and over 650 career home runs. I want you to name these five players.
All right. I know two.
Right. I do too. I think we are thinking of the same two.
I am assuming we are.
Yeah.
Oh, I will give you one more piece of information.
Okay.
Two of the five players have the same last name.
Oh, yep.
I know what it is now.
Oh, damn it. I think that little extra piece that might have sealed it for Jordan.
I have four of the names.
I have two. So I need one more.
You need one more, to maintain your lead. And that's assuming all four of Jordan's are correct. Oh, yeah. And again, there are five.
He seems pretty confident on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm assuming I can't just give you the last name.
Of course you could.
I can give you two players I'm thinking of and then another just last name.
Of course.
Okay.
Yep, locked in. I got the last name. I'm pretty sure of this one.
Are you locked in?
All right.
Yeah,
I'm locked in.
All right. So one of the trades has to be Jeff Bagwell for Larry Anderson. Connecticut native Jeff Bagwell, or at least went to school in Hartford.
Yeah. All right. University of Hartford.
Yeah.
You got three more names to give me.
I feel like it'd be cheap to just say Anderson for the other guy, if that is the case, but I want to actually think of the players. I'm assuming it's not a Bagwell.
Well, there's three other guys. So of the three, it could possibly be that two of them have the same last name.
Well, yeah, I'm hoping. Maybe one of them has the name Anderson, or maybe the other two guys two of the three guys I haven't thought of have the same name.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's one of those two scenarios, right? Because you're right. It's not another Bagwell.
Yeah.
It is not Teddy Beanbag Bagwell, who retired one hit by pitch away from breaking that record.
Sorry, Eric. Was it Craig Biggio's record?
Well, I don't know if they ever actually mentioned who had the record on Boy Meets World, but I don't know if you know what I'm referencing, but there.
I didn't. The only baseball Boy Meets World reference that I know of was Jim Abbott.
So there's an episode of Boy Meets World where Corey's brother Eric invests money in the rookie card of Teddy Beanbag Bagwell.
Oh boy.
Who is on pace to break the career hit by pitch record, but then decides to retire one hit by pitch away from the record and crushes Eric's dream of financial freedom.
So Mr. 3000 before Mr. 3000.
Yeah. Yes.
So I'm pretty sure Larry Anderson's a pitcher and Jeff Bagwell is obviously a first baseman. You said they combined for 650 home runs?
650 career home, over 650 career home runs and okay. Nearly 4,000 career hits.
So this other position player probably has like 200 home runs and 1,500 hits. And I have no idea what Larry Anderson's career looked like. Maybe the position player is the Anderson. Maybe I'm traveling down a dead end street. Yeah, I got nothing. I'll go Larry Anderson, Jeff Bagwell, and then some other Anderson.
All right. Jordan, who did you come up with?
So Jeff Bagwell for Larry Anderson, straight mm-hmm. up. And then Brady Anderson. Kurt Schilling, and Mike Boddicker.
Oh, it was another right. Kurt Schilling trade.
So we came full circle. We started with Schilling. We ended with Schilling. August 30th, 1990 was, of course, the Jeff Bagwell for Larry Anderson trade. And the July 29, 1988 trade, Kurt Schilling and Brady Anderson were traded from the Red Sox.
Okay, yeah. I couldn't remember the direction.
So you will get 15 points, Andrew, which brings you up to 99. Jordan had 76, and Kurt Schilling and Brady Anderson were, in fact, traded for Mike Boddicker, which means he went 5-for-5, picking up 25 points.
Well done.
And 101 points total by 2 points.
Damn.
Edging out. And by the way, the 2 points difference is he got 6 of the pitchers that had 250 to 300 wins, and you got 4. So that was the difference in the game. But well done, Jordan. 101 to 99.
Yes.
You are the winner here in a very hard fought match.
Oh, yeah.
Way to walk it off there, though, at the end with that Boddicker trade.
I have one question for you both.
Okay. Yeah.
Which two outfielders who played concurrently made the most all-star appearances for the most number of teams with 5 each? At least one all-star appearance with 5 different teams.
Ooh.
Did Sheffield do that?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Sheffield is one. So I was wondering if Sheffield did that. So it's funny. One of my favorite trivia questions, Alfonso Soriano homered in the All-Star game for 3 different teams, and he made the All-Star game for 4 different teams at 2 position, the Rangers, the Nationals, the Cubs, and the Yankees.
Yeah.
But he does not have a 5th team. So we're looking for this guy's the brux of his career was in the 90s and maybe early 2000s.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
So like Canseco, you know, would be a possibility, but I don't think Canseco made the All-Star game with 5 teams, even though obviously with the A's, he probably made it with the Rangers and maybe Red Sox or Blue Jays.
He had that one random really good year with the Blue Jays, he might have made it.
And Tampa, too.
Yeah, but I don't...
he was with the Yankees for like 2 months, so it could have been him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who else made... But Sosa's not like...
It's not Vlad Guerrero
would
not
have been
Luis
the Expos
Gonzalez,
and the Angels. Adrian Beltre would be a good answer, but
he only
definitely
paid for
had to make
teams.
It at least one. But that's not concurrently. But Dodgers, Red Sox, Rangers.
And he's also not an outfielder.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, he's not an outfielder. So we're looking for an outfielder. Okay. So this is a great question, by the way.
5 all-star teams.
All right. Five all-star games at least with 5 different teams. Like
I think maybe I know it.
All right.
Kenny Lofton played for a million teams. and was good, but for many of them.
I don't know that he was an all-star for five of them.
I feel like the bulk of his all-star was with the Indians.
Yeah. That's a great answer. I can't imagine he was a five-time all-star, maybe, although it's possible. Jim Edmonds just going to be an all-star with the Cardinals and maybe the Angels.
I mean, he had a couple good years with
he's not all-star years. Yeah. I mean, you know,
he played for like the Brewers and Cubs and Reds, but that was just flash in the pan, you know, cups of coffee at the end of his career.
Who else? Like Nelson Cruz has bounced around, but that's not concurrent.
I wouldn't call them concurrent because their careers overlapped.
I mean, you know,
Sean Green, I don't think he played for that many teams. Raul Mondesi didn't play for that many teams.
No, Magaliar Ordóñez is.
Same thing. He played for two.
Yeah, Tigers and White Sox, basically. Matt Williams, not an outfielder, and really only three, maybe four teams.
I really want to try to figure this out now because I feel like this is right in my wheelhouse of baseball.
He had a very famous moment.
A very famous moment.
Luis Gonzalez.
No.
Yeah.
Very famous. I mean, that kind of leads me back to Torrey Hunter with the Barry Bonds, you know, robbing him of the home run in the All-Star game. But I still I don't like that.
It's obviously Dwayne Wise who had that catch in Marco Kirby.
Yeah, five-time All-Star Dwayne Wise.
Yeah.
Here's another hint. It was a negative moment for his team.
So is it Jose Canseco with the home run off the head?
Okay.
Okay.
In the playoffs, it was a negative moment for his team in the playoffs.
Oh.
Negative moment for his team in the playoffs.
That he was directly involved in.
Carlos Beltran?
Moises Alou?
Moises Alou is the
Moises
answer.
Alou.
Yeah.
Moises Alou.
Yeah.
94 with the Expos, 97 with the Marlins in his only season there, 98 and 01 with the Astros, 04 with the Cubs, and 05 with the Giants.
Nice.
Wow, I would not have remembered him being an all-star with the Giants. That is
and he had two separate stints playing for his father.
Yeah, as the manager. That I did remember with
Expos and Giants.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow, that is a great question.
Yeah. Right. I was playing Sporkle on All-Star stuff, and it's like players that have made multiple, at least four different All-Star games with four different teams.
Oh, that's a good quiz.
Yeah,
I'm sure that quiz was done by that guy
Deej? I love Deej. Yep. Soriano is definitely on that quiz, by the way. So,
All right, so yeah, thanks for joining us, guys. It was had a blast playing some trivia with you guys.
Yeah, thanks.
That's all we have for this week. Thanks for listening. Next week, we'll discuss the results of the trade deadline and other news around the league. Our Baseball Weekly is executive produced by Lewis and edited by me, Nine. Our production administrator is Christine. I hosted the intro along with Deej, and Jeremy hosted our trade deadline trivia segment with Andy and Jordan. Our theme music was composed by Chuck Lease. Our Baseball Weekly is released every Monday morning at 1 a.m., so it's ready for your morning commute. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.